Welcome to Team White. Before we actually get into the interview, I want you to take a look at this video. This short video is about a woman with a PhD. Her name is Megan Squire. She's a professor. The man that you're going to listen to in the actual interview, he is a man who's been, let's call it, destroyed by this woman. And you will hear all the things he tells you about Antifa, about Megan Squire, about a nefarious group called BAMN, which is BAMN, by any means necessary. You are looking at the modern Jewish terrorism of the United States and how it actually works. So watch this little video, and then after that comes Chris, and Chris will tell you more about this woman and about many nefarious things that are going on in the USA. Here is a tweet from Megan Squire, and this is what she put out on Twitter. Let me just read it to you. And it says, "Going back in the archives for that first Boogaloo page." Let me just explain. The Boogaloo is a American term that the youngsters in America have come up with for race war. So in their continual struggle to communicate with each other, they invent words and terms as they need in order to get past censorship, etc., etc., which is all very good stuff. Whites are functioning well on the internet, and whites are gaining ground in their understanding of what I'd call internet guerrilla warfare. You see, when the Jews and the communists and liberals are all sneaking around, that's not a problem. But later on, the white right is learning how to sneak around and do their own thing. And now the whites are getting better and better at it. And now these liberals are now freaked out by this. But anyway, Boogaloo is a term, modern term, that the youngsters have used for the coming race war in the United States. So this Megan Squire, she writes, "We see they've been into racist memes since their start in 2018. They like Rhodesia, a classic white supremacist talking point." And then she says, "CF Dylan Roof's jacket patch," because Dylan Roof, who shot those blacks in the church, Dylan had a Rhodesian flag and a South African apartheid flag. And now here she says, "And here they use a racist term for killing black Africans." What she's referring to here on the meme is this thing on the far right. This book cover, and it says Franklin Slots Floppies, and floppy is a term from the Rhodesian army. The Rhodesians developed their own slang for the various things they were doing, and slotting a floppy meant shooting a black. And I'm not sure the origins of some of this, but I assume that the term floppy comes from the fact that if you ever shoot something and you go and you touch the animal that you've shot, you will see that it is very floppy. You know, before rigor mortis sets in, the thing that you've just killed is floppy. Later rigor mortis sets in and it becomes stiff. So slotting floppies meant shooting blacks in Rhodesia. So here is Franklin, who's a turtle. And that military rifle that the turtle has got there, that is a classic Belgian FN rifle that was a standard NATO weapon in the decades past. And that was the standard armament of the Rhodesian army. And then on the left is a photo of a Rhodesian soldier. Let me just zoom in and read it carefully. It says, "Whatever your job, you get the lion's share of life in Rhodesia. It's good to live and work so close to nature, and even the highly trained and skilled men of the Rhodesian army find time to enjoy the delights of the unspoiled African bush." And there you can see a white Rhodesian soldier with a lion cub. So, of course, to this liberal hag, when whites stand up for themselves and fight for themselves, then it's racist. And that, of course, is the whole definition of everything. Whenever Jews, liberals, and communists talk, and they talk about racism, racism is when white people stand up and fight for themselves. Racism is when white people gather together as a group. Racism is when white people try to unite. Anything that whites do by themselves as a group, that is immediately called racist. And of course the Jews are behind this. The Jews know very well that once whites start standing together, that whites are going to pack a punch. And what they need to do, the undertone of this that you are not being told about, is that the Jew is out to divide white people. He's out to divide whites. And these liberals are looking for any sign of unity among whites. And then they've got to run in with racist, racist, racism, racism, stop it, stop it. And what they're really doing is they're just trying to break white people apart. So that white people now also have to say, yes, I have a black friend. Yes, I have a Jewish friend. Yes, this and that. The ultimate goal here is to prevent white unity. That's what the real game is. So anyway, so this Professor Hag, who is busy destroying the white right, this, in her viewpoint, this is criminal. See, these whites are doing wrong by even looking up to other whites. In this case, young whites in America who look up to whites in Africa. So the liberal has to go in there and say, oh, look at all this racism, and look at this racist terminology for killing black Africans, blah, blah, blah. All the junk that they talk about. These bloody fools, these same bloody fools, if they knew what was going on in the world, they'd realize who is keeping them safe in their beds at night. They need the military. Meanwhile, they're busy denigrating other whites who've stood up and defended themselves. These people are completely out of touch with reality. These people like Squire. She's a malicious fool who's got all the most twisted values. And in order to understand this line of thinking, we will get back to it when I discuss Professor Carol Quigley. Because then you'll begin to understand where some of this insane madness of white liberals in America comes from. You'll understand the actual intellectual basis for them believing the nonsense that they believe. But the key takeaway from her and from this kind of thinking is the notion that white people need other races. That's the real underlying hidden Jewish value that all these communists and liberals and others have bought into. They've bought into a deeper thing. The deeper thing being that white people need all the non-whites, need the Jews, need everybody. Because that is key for Jewish survival. Jewish survival. So what the Jew needs therefore becomes everybody else's value. And these liberals in America, they believe they need blacks, Jews, everybody else. They believe that this is necessary. And in order to understand why, you need to we need to discuss Professor Quigley. So here is the little video about Megan Squire. Here is a short video from a TED talk that is given by Professor Megan Squire. She works at Elon University. This woman is also a doctor. She's got a PhD. So on paper, this woman is extremely clever. Personally, I'm not so sure, but anyway. Her big thing is, you could call her the censorship witch. Her goal is to shut us up, and to shut us up from saying what we want to say. This is because she believes that the concept of extremism is bad. However, often when these liberal fools think that extremism is bad, they also are quick to embrace communism. They have no problem with having communist friends. The only people that they really want to shut up are whites, and white males in particular. She has apparently done a lot of damage to the right wing. I've heard this from one of my friends in the USA. He himself was doxxed, and they had all kinds of data on him. And she is apparently the key person who's busy hunting through databases, etc., and trying to find details about the white right. She has access to Facebook's database. I don't know how easy it is to get that kind of access that she's got, whether just anybody can go and hunt through all sorts of messages. I don't know enough. I've never bothered writing an app for Facebook. But you never know. It might be that she's got the connections that allow her to go and do data mining there. She also talks about data mining Venmo. From what I can pick up from what she says, and also from the books that she's written two books on data mining that are sold on Amazon. And one of them deals with the language called Python. I have recently begun dabbling in Python a bit myself. It has certain uses for me. And this woman's books, both of them have got a rating of 2 out of 5 on Amazon. So it doesn't look as though her technical skills are impressing other people. Her system that she boasts about, called Whack-A-Mole, sounds to me like it's a hodgepodge of software that she's written to import data from various databases and to then massage it. Since I also have gathered data and written systems, I suspect that her whack-a-mole system is something that she's hacked together, and she's probably just storing all this information on a database. What is quite interesting in her presentation are her charts. I have told people on a number of occasions that I'm sure that intelligence agencies are busy keeping track of everybody that we have contact with, and that they're building up big organograms of who talks to whom, etc. Well, if you look at her charts, then she's actually busy doing that as well. She's actually drawing up an organogram, and she's got tons of data about us. I must say, I wish that I could get much better pictures of her organograms, because I think it would be very interesting to see what it tells us about ourselves. Here is the enemy, and she's using it, but I'd love to know more about what it tells us about ourselves. Who is where and who is reaching what audience? In one case, when she's speaking, she talks about some people passing on a message on Facebook, and then somebody changes the title and changes some of the text, and then they blast it off to a group that spreads to 1 million people. I was seriously impressed by that. I didn't know that there was anybody on our side who had access to somehow spreading to a group of 1 million people. And it seemed as if there might even be another group that was just as big. So I was pretty impressed by that. But her goal is to shut up what she calls online extremism. I never could quite understand what is this obsession with extremism. Why is it that these so-called liberals are focusing on extremists? And of course, extremist always, without fail, ends up being a white male. But when we get back to the topic of Professor Carol Quigley, I now understand what's going on. In a nutshell, these Jews claim to be positioning themselves politically in the center. In South Africa, that is how the liberal Jews position themselves. So they claim that they are between communists on the left and whites on the right. But the reality is that they are basically in bed with the communists. Basically. They're in bed with the communists, and the only real enemy that they are scared of is the white right. So it's a bogus position. But extremism is a particular topic that Professor Quigley spoke about, and it's one of many concepts to do with civilization that we need to get to. Because once you understand Quigley, then you'll understand why these supposed liberals are talking all the nonsense that they're talking. And they believe that they are doing good things for civilization. However, Quigley explained his logic as to what these things are, why he arrives at that conclusion. And that is a big, long story all by itself. But these idiots and fools, and she's a fool, these idiots and fools believe that they are doing good things. Now that I understand Quigley in detail, I tell you, I think I could easily debate these people, and one could actually beat them. But you need to understand deeper things of what it is that this is all about. She also mentions the four ideologies. She says there are these four ideologies that are clearly the problem. I'm assuming that the four ideologies are National Socialism, Nazism, Fascism, the South, the American South, the Confederates, and I'm guessing apartheid or colonialism. But it would be interesting to hear more on what she says. I don't think she's a great speaker, and it seems to be just a small section from a talk she gave, and probably the audience had to be forced to be there. They seem to be younger people and easily fooled. The crux of all these arguments, though, or one of the critical parts of their arguments, lies in the notion that you need other people other than whites. That is actually the crux of their argument. And when you understand Quigley and what Quigley was saying, you'll understand why these people believe that you need lots of non-whites around. And this helps to explain the extreme weakness of the United States. Everybody is weak at the knees when it comes to the blacks, and that is because of some of the concepts that came from Quigley. These fools and idiots believe in a soft form of civilization. However, that in and of itself is a fallacy, because civilization was created by strong white males. It was created by white men. You can go back to ancient Greece, you can go back to Rome. Modern democratic civilization is supposed to be based on Rome and Greece. But in Rome and Greece, women weren't in parliament, women weren't in the government, and it was actually a military force that created democracy. And it was nothing at all like what these liberals believe. The Romans didn't have women in government. They didn't allow it. These were military men who had democracy among themselves. These were strong people. And in the writings of Quigley, he also explains his view of civilization, and he too has this soft view of civilization. But it's all wrong. It's not what it was. That is not how it ever was. Civilization was created by strong men and maintained by strong men. You cannot take something like that and maintain it using weak, pathetic scum, because the system needs to be upheld through strength. And all these modern liberals, most likely under the influence of Jews, they believe in the notion that civilization is soft. It's not. And I think Christianity is also added to this notion. The reality is that when the white male stands up, and he now wants to stand up against the system, the fact of the matter is, he is the owner of the system. And here are these women and faggots and Jews wanting to tell you, no, no, you can't do this, you can't do this. Reality is, this was originally invented by the white male. And the white male's temperament and his thinking is correct. And these scum like her, they're protecting all the people who are actually breaking down civilization. The whole thing is such a mess. I cannot believe that anybody can take her nonsense seriously. But this woman has caused a lot of damage, and you can listen to her story of what she is up to. But I'm sure we've got a lot of cleverer people. We just don't have access to the money and the kind of data that she has access to. But even she seems to be limited in some ways. However, I have it on good authority from a well-connected American friend of mine that she's caused a lot of damage to the right wing. So anyway, listen to her story, and I wish that we could get some of those organograms and look at them more closely. To me, I think that it shows how much we've progressed and how big the movement really is. And if she thinks that they're going to stop us, they have no idea what's coming, these fools and idiots. As for her, she wouldn't be using computers nor be in a civilized country if it wasn't for the actions of the white males. Women like her are absolutely treasonous to their own race, if not their own nation. It disgusts me.
How can we use data science to understand how hate groups organize online? Data science is the process of cleaning, storing, and organizing data so that we can use computer models and statistics to understand problems and pose solutions, ask questions. Some of the questions that I'm most interested in this space have to do with online radicalization, online propaganda and hatred, and how it flows through social media, and the makeup of groups and hate groups that use these systems. One of the earliest questions that I asked in this space was about group membership crossover. I wondered, if you join a hate group online, do you just kind of stay with that, or do you ever dabble? Do you ever change ideologies? To answer this question, I started looking at an event you might be familiar with, the Unite the Right event in Charlottesville, Virginia, back in 2017. So this event was organized on Facebook, which at the time made it very easy to collect data about. So what I did was write some software that asked Facebook for all of the people who had RSVP'd going or maybe to this event. And then I wrote some more software to construct a list of 2,000 hate groups that were actively using Facebook at that time to organize. And then I asked Facebook for the membership rosters for all of those groups as well. I threw everything into a database and then constructed a social network based on the shared memberships across all of those groups. This is a picture of what that social network looks like, some of the ideologies that were involved in those hate groups on Facebook. Each circle on the diagram is a group. The groups are, the circles are larger, rather, if they have more members in the group. And they're connected with a line if the groups share members in common. Groups are drawn towards the center of the diagram the more other groups they share with. And the ones out on the fringe, out on the periphery, are kind of not sharing with very many other groups at all. So my question to you is, can you tell just from this diagram, or can you guess where the Unite the Right event might be? If you guess the center, you are exactly correct. It was one of the most centrally located, one of the most ideologically diverse and pulling together other groups in the entire Facebook hate ecosystem at this time. In fact, if we hover over the circle, we sort of blow it up. This is called an ego graph. We can see just which other kinds of groups this event was pulling from. It's basically every other ideology we had there, and in good numbers. This is a photograph my husband took in Charlottesville that day on the ground. And data, photographs are data as well. One of the things I really love about this picture is that you can see the same four ideologies that I just showed you in the network graph, but here they are live and in person. And they're represented by the flags the men are carrying and the outfits that they're wearing. This event truly did catalyze multiple ideologies and multiple groups to come together for one day. Another question that I asked about online hate is how the groups themselves are organized. I was curious about leadership and membership, and if we could use data science to expose some of those facts. I turned to a different social network, though, to answer these questions. I looked at a network called Venmo. This is a payment network where people pay one another for services. You can see in this screenshot that two members are paying one another for monthly dues. This is a hate group that's using Venmo quite regularly. Good news for me is all of the data on Venmo is publicly available. So it's easy, once again, to collect and make a nice data set. I wrote a computer program to collect 200 different hate group members that were using this platform to pay their monthly dues to an organization, and then constructed another network to see if I could discern the leaders of the groups automatically. This is a picture of that network, and in this case, each circle is a member of the hate group. And this time they're connected with lines if they paid a transaction to one another. So they paid each other for dues or t-shirts or stuff like that. The more transactions they had, the larger the circle. And then I colorized them red if my computer model indicated that those people might be good candidates for being leaders. The question I had, though, was how do I tell if my model was right? How do I know if those actually were the leaders? So as it turns out, this particular hate group has bylaws, and they put these bylaws online. And they blacked out the names of the national leaders in the document. But unfortunately for them, they did a poor job of this, so anyone could just hover over with their mouse and reveal the names of the eight national leaders there. Yeah, so I, of course, did that. And now I have a list of the eight leaders right nationwide. And then I have my predicted leaders, so I can now compare and see if my model was correct. And right off the bat, we see that four of the leaders that I predicted were in the bylaws document, so that's pretty interesting. Another three of the leaders that I predicted were not in the national organization as leaders, but they did end up being cell leaders, individual cells. Another two of the members that I predicted to be leaders, I was unable to confirm because they used a fake name on Venmo, so I don't know who they are. And then my model got one totally wrong. I never would have predicted that this person down at the bottom here would have been a nationwide leader, and yet he was one of those named. What we learned from this is that we can use just the data that these guys exposed on social media to reconstruct a leadership map and a hierarchy of the membership within this group to some effect. The last example I'm going to share with you today is about tracking online propaganda and hate as it flows through social media. I became interested in this last year after the Christchurch massacre in New Zealand, when the killer created a manifesto of his beliefs and posted it online and then live-streamed his killings. Social media companies were frantic. They were trying to remove this content from the internet, and I wrote a technical article about why that was difficult to do. And my editor at the time asked me, hey, do you have one of those lines and boxes diagrams? And I said, oh man, that's a great idea, but I don't have one. So I thought about it for a long time, and what would that even look like? About 6 months later, unfortunately, another killer was inspired by the first one. This time it was in Germany. And he also live-streamed his killings and released a manifesto online. That morning, I dashed together a diagram. It looks like this. And I put it up on Twitter. And just really quick, I'm not super happy with how it looks at all, but I was trying to convey how two copies of the video, or two versions of the video, had moved through a social media platform called Telegram through their channels. I don't like this diagram, and I can think about 100 things wrong with it or things that I'd fix about it. And about 2 weeks later, I was given another chance. Thankfully, not another killing, but this time it was an online harassment campaign, a hate campaign. And so what I'm going to show you next is sort of a work in progress of how I'm attempting to diagram how this hate campaign and how that harassment flowed through social media. It started on a Facebook page where someone had put up a post that was directing hate at a particular individual, targeting them for harassment. The post was picked up by a handful of other similar Facebook pages. Each of these had about 2,000 likes, so kind of a slow start. But one of the pages, one of those posts, caught the attention of another Facebook administrator, and this one had a much larger audience, about 500,000 followers. He changed the headline a little bit, added some more hateful special sauce, and reposted the harassment campaign. And this time, phase two of the campaign looked something like this. It really started to catch fire. Some of those large circles that you see in the center of the diagram, those are pages with 1 million, 2 million. One of them had 2.5 million followers. So this campaign really started to take off at this point, and the hate was very intense. The campaign eventually died down. There was a third phase to it, but it didn't really catch much attention. And my question at this point was, how did this happen? What was the catalyst? What was the fuel that made people direct so much hate and so much harassment at this target? How did this work? So I ran the numbers on the reactions that people had to the Facebook post. I collected the data, and then I did some math, and I figured out that over 80%, upwards of 85, sometimes 90% of the reactions that people had that they were targeting at this person were the angry emoji. They were just so mad. There's a lot of things that I don't like about this diagram, too. I'm not entirely done with it. I'm not super pleased. One thing that I haven't been able to convey at all, I just don't know how to do it yet, is how to show the harassment campaign moving into other platforms. So this campaign moved onto Twitter, and it moved onto Telegram. I don't know how to add all of that to this picture. It also moved into the real world, to the person's email and to their phone. How do I visualize all those messages and calls? How do I visualize threats to the person's home and to their workplace? What does that look like on a picture? I just don't know. I've worked on it for a really long time, but I must tell you, this is not my favorite diagram to work on at all, because in case you didn't guess by now, the target of that campaign was me. So not a lot of love lost between me and this diagram, but I'm still working on it. It's okay, though. It's one of those lemons and lemonade things where being the target of an online harassment campaign like that is just one more opportunity to use data science to understand online hate and how it works, so that one day we'll finally know enough that we'll be able to come up with a solution and fix it. Thank you.
Welcome to Team White. This is Jan Lamprecht. I'm in Johannesburg, South Africa. And today, can you believe, we don't have Alex Linder here. That is so sad. He had other things that prevented him from being here. And he said that I could go ahead with Team White. So this is the only Team White we've ever had without Alex. And it's really sad. And in this case, I really wanted to introduce Alex to this guy that you're going to meet up with in this show. And I'm hoping that we can have him back a couple of times, because I think he and Alex will get along like a house on fire, if that has any meaning at all to you. Anyway, the man you're about to meet, his name is Chris. And how I met Chris was last year when I was at the Fash Bash in the Poconos in the USA. And this man, Chris, there are many things about him that I took a liking to. And I just want to give a bit more background, is that he had his own radio show. He does his own stuff. But I generally like this guy because of his attitude, and he's also quite a different kind of a person I'd not expected to run into at the Fash Bash. At the Fash Bash, I was waiting to meet mostly Americans, And then here is this guy who, I think I've got it correct if I say he's sort of half Irish, half English. And here's this gent who lives in America. He's got his own business. He does his own stuff. And he's a very, very active guy. Very active and very energetic. And very, if I could call it, American. He is a white man from the British Isles, but he lives in America. He has totally assimilated into the United States. He functions like Americans, and he's very, very energetic, and he's true to his race. And I liked the energy and the intellect of Chris. To me, Chris was something else. I really enjoyed it, and I took an instant liking to this guy at the Fash Bash. And after the Fash Bash, when I was still in the United States, Chris did another interview with me. But I want to talk a little bit more about something else. When I was at the Fash Bash, I gave a lecture, and the lecture that I gave was called 50 Years of Race War in Southern Africa. And that was something that I'd prepared originally, actually just for South Africans, because I didn't even imagine that I'd be ending up in the United States or Canada. And I put a lot of work into this lecture called 50 Years of Race War in Southern Africa. And I'd given it to some people in South Africa, including the Boer Legion and the leader of the Boer Legion. That he and some of his senior officers had been there. And people liked this lecture. But this lecture was an understanding of all the racial conflict that whites in Southern Africa have gone through in Southern Africa over a period of 50 years. Now, some people may have thought that I was just there to just come and just talk a lot of nonsense, and I just come and I'm just here to come and talk some shit and that's that. But the reality was that the contents of that lecture was intended to describe accurately the achievements of the whites and the real issues in the racial conflicts that happened in Southern Africa. And that it is wrong to say that the whites of Southern Africa are losers, because we actually didn't lose any of the wars. And I go into all those different details and I explain what the different whites did, the Portuguese, the Rhodesians, the South Africans. So when I gave this talk, and the main place in America where I gave it was at the Fash Bash, and I tried to give the talk at other places. I tried a bit in Memphis. I tried in Florida, where someone else made arrangements. But I found that the other audiences were not really interested. People were really very bored at the notion of even listening to anything that a white guy from Africa has to say. However, thanks to Paul Fromm in Canada, he'd said to me that he will allow me to tour Canada at his expense, and I can give my talk at various places. So I gave my talk at a number of places in Canada, and at each one of those places, I had bigger audiences than I'd had in America, the biggest being at the Fash Bash. And because I gave this talk to a number of big audiences, I also had some interesting discussions with some of the whites in Canada, and it was very, very fruitful for me. I could see that people are understanding things. And in one place in particular, I met a Canadian naval officer. And the Canadian naval officer came to me after the talk, and he asked me a couple of questions, and I answered his questions. And I could see that he knows a whole bunch of stuff. And him asking me these questions, it allowed him to get certain things into a deeper perspective. And I was grateful that here was a guy who was of a military mindset, and he was understanding what I was saying. However, when I returned to the United States and I was in Memphis, Chris wanted to interview me. And when we did this interview, Chris said a whole bunch of stuff. And what blew me away was that Chris was, to me, almost the only American who really understood and grasped the importance of what I was saying in that lecture. Other people may have thought it was just some light entertainment from someone in Africa, but Chris actually grasped the military principles. And we did a great show on that, which I actually want to get back to. But that meant something to me, was that this guy, the penny is dropped. He realizes something amazing that was in that talk. And I actually want to get back and talk about that as a separate issue later. But for me, Chris was lively, alive, vibrant, and totally rooted in America. And just a final thing before Chris and I start talking is, now that these blacks are busy burning down America, breaking it left, right, and center, I've now been to America twice in 10 years. And I want to tell you, man, that anybody who's got a problem with the United States of America, anybody who thinks that it is right to burn down the country, to break things, to tear down statues, these people are absolute garbage and filth. I don't see any reason at all why anybody should be doing any of that in the United States. The only kinds of people who do that must be total degenerates. They must be complete idiots. They must be totally unsuitable for living in Western civilization. And for me, it's just hideous to see and hear the news that comes from the United States. And also, this just adds to my feeling that everything that we're seeing this year is just aimed at Donald Trump, man. It's like everything is aimed at Trump. Even COVID-19, I was thinking that this has got to do with Trump, destroy the economy so Trump can't win the election. But now if they're busy burning down the country because of some freaking black criminal who was killed, all of this is just South Africa all over again. So anyway, so without further ado, here it's my honor to present to you Chris. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing very well. Very well. Thank you very much. And thanks for having me on your show.
It's an absolute pleasure, Chris. I'm very sorry that I didn't get you on earlier. I was busy with my own issues as I've been trying to set things up here in South Africa and just surviving with my own stuff. So it's really an honor to have you on the show. And
I mean, no problem at all. I mean, it's so busy over here. Literally by the second that the phone calls are coming in from different parts of the United States. And, you know, thank you for all the compliments. But one of the things of my show, which has now been taken down, Antifa Atlanta managed to take us down, which was being hosted by a British company about 7 weeks ago, and it's always, yeah. You know, and also we've lost, my co-host and I have lost over 30 Facebook pages, and
wow.
Twitter. Now this is how bad the censorship has got, but of course we really need my show at the moment, because the one thing that my co-host, we did with our show, because we were not members of any organization or any sort of political group or whatever. So what was going to be our political, you know, what was going to be our point of our show was to connect people and also to inform them. When I say connect people, different organizations, different part of America, different parts of the world, you know, who didn't know each other, because I knew that sooner or later that the communications would be interfered with, you know, whether it's censorship or, you know, somebody turning the phones off or whatever. We had to get people in contact. So that was our mission. So it's a little bit interesting that as all this stuff happens and you're talking about Trump, all of a sudden my show gets hit. And I'm sure you'll, you know, ask me more about this. I got badly doxxed. When anybody doesn't know what doxing means, it means all my private information was put out there for everybody, including satellite photographs of my property, properties of my back deck, my family members' names, my business names, how long I've been in America, my military history, my background doing security and debt collecting and everything else. It was all laid out there. And of course, my other partner, my co-host, she is very, very bad badly attacked as well. So this is how, and of all the people I've met, Jan, in the so-called movement, the cause, wherever it's around the world, there's some nut jobs in our we've all met them. But the thing is, then the occasional idiot does something silly, shoot up a mosque or something. But the thing is, other than that, our people are very law-abiding, don't do nasty things and what have you.
Definitely.
And I've never seen, after 5 years of my show and being on the road and actually seeing Antifa right there and the way they act, the way that they're controlled, when I mean controlled, their command and control sort of system, even to the point where there was a demonstration in D.C. I wasn't actually there, but we did a sort of looked at the whole situation afterwards. They actually had cameras on the ground, because everybody's got an iPhone at the time, but they were passing this information back to a control room with the cameras, and then also they were putting the information out there where the police were and what have you. Then they would have their guys on the ground. Obviously it's a bit more sophisticated now, 5 years down the road, with iPhones and smartphones, and then they would send the demonstrators one way or another. And then of course I'm very aware of this sort of Antifa, but like I said, it's coming to be a bit of a shock that just before all this sort of thing hits, and I think the shooting of this particular, not sorry, not the shooting, the death of this black man up in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minneapolis, Minnesota, to me, it could have been something else. It could have been whatever the reason would be. They were just waiting for that incident to throw this whole Antifa, which don't get it wrong, and it's a bit of an unholy alliance between the sort of Zionists of the world and the socialists / communists of the world, which is this very, very strange relationship. But like, they were ready to rock and roll. I mean, the earlier stuff I heard today, that there was bricks and bombs and everything else, like, already in place for these demonstrators to go to. But coming back to Trump, and then I'll shut up. One thing, I was not a great lover of Trump when he was sort of running, where my co-host was, she liked him. But I said, what is important about Trump, for us? Why are we going to support Trump rather than, what's the big deal? What is about Trump? And our thing was the Supreme Court. So anybody knows in here, if here in the United States, if we lose the Supreme Court, we lose the ability to have free speech, which is the First Amendment. And also we lose our right to have guns, which is the Second Amendment. And basically without that, we're done. We're finished.
Right. Done. Yeah, absolutely.
So that's why we support Trump. Now, yes, we all know his weaknesses and the silly things he does on a daily basis. But overall, we still support him. And then what's the alternative? we don't have a lot of choice.
Absolutely. People grasped at Trump. But are there any other points you wanted to make there before I throw in my comments?
No, I mean, just, obviously we can talk for hours, as we have done in the past. So yeah, jump in.
Okay, let me ask you this. There was something you mentioned now that's like blasting. And can you believe I'm now forgetting it? The Supreme Court. The Supreme Court. Haven't you already lost the Supreme Court?
No, it's a majority now of about 5-4 in favor of the sort of right wing, if we can call it that simplistically. But I mean, there are a couple of swing voters, there. But and so of course, Obama.
So it's not totally lost yet.
No. No, and if one thing, if we have the Supreme Court, the right wing, the whites, Europeans, and there's a lot of people who are not of white skin, they're on our side because they realize that the whites are the goose that lays the golden egg. So we're not completely like us, just the poor whites versus everybody else.
Yes.
And of course, a lot of whites are actually totally our worst enemy, I believe, because the blacks are not smart enough to do this on their own.
Correct.
Coordinated. I mean, the blacks and all this.
Someone's behind this.
Right. So the coordination. And if you look at, say, the Antifa, and there's certain things I cannot say, which I've already given you a hint before the show, I cannot even mention or even give sort of clues to. But Antifa is definitely behind a lot of this, because Antifa is a loose organization. But the thing is, they work with other groups, sort of Zionist groups, Black Lives Matters, the Black Panthers. There's a group by the name of BAM, which is B-A-M-N, which means by any means necessary.
You're kidding me. I've heard by any means necessary. That sounds like outright communist revolution. Sounds like killing and anything.
Yep. And by any means necessary. By any.
That is crazy. Now, what do we know about Antifa? Because Antifa interests me a lot, because they seem to me to be the group that is the most effective at harming the white right. What do we actually know about this lot, and how do they function? And by the way, you mentioning that in Washington, D.C., that they had cameras on the ground, that they were sending stuff to a control room, that they were controlling people. Chris, that's got to cost a lot of money. Where does that money come from? Because the white right wing doesn't have money. We have nothing. So where does the fucking money come from?
Most of the meetings I go to, the people can't afford to buy themselves beer. But the money comes from, for example, I covered Ferguson, which is in by St. Louis, out west, Midwest. And we saw the numbers that were put together, and George Soros, he put $33 million into that. Then you have the riots out there in the West Coast. Was at Berkeley College. And there was an organization, I believe, that came out of New Mexico or Arizona, sort of pretty much an unknown organization, was supporting these rioters or protesters, as the left call them. It's always protests. It's not right. Even though they're stealing all the time,
Chris, if I may interrupt, this sounds like Africa. We used to call them communist terrorists, and then the media calls them freedom fighters.
Absolutely.
Well, the thing is,
this organization that was pumping the money into these people out west came from a foundation. I might be technically the legal name might be a little bit wrong, but it was actually run by George Soros's son. So it goes on and on and on. I mean, you know, in Charlottesville, which is the very, very frightening, anybody who has seen the Unite the Right rallies that were there, for example, there was a church very close to the square there where all the demonstrations went on, and it was a United Methodist Church. So the United Methodist Church has been hijacked, like a lot of other religious organizations, and they were using the basement for Antifa to change out of their clothes. So they were going from, we know of three clothes changes. One is the traditional, as everybody's seen it, or the well-known black type of dress with a red sort of neckerchief type of thing around their face. Then also they had, which is interesting, they had pastel clothes, which is another sort of uniform that people wasn't expecting, and then again they would go in and change their clothes again. And of course, this is how strange it is, but if you think about it, it's very, very clever. They had like raincoats on and umbrellas and everything else. It's really funny because there was a mention, I think yesterday I saw somewhere, and there's so much information out there, and trying to hang on to it and try to absorb it, it's incredible. But Antifa was carrying umbrellas. So it's very strange. Now, an umbrella is an innocent thing, but also you can use it to protect yourself against, spray. And also you can use it as a weapon. You can also use it to block cameras. You can block it to use cameras, CCTV, et cetera, et cetera. So, and also it's another thing that you can actually see if somebody's carrying an umbrella. It's a form of identification. I've seen it. I was at Stone Mountain. I was using my journalist credentials down there. And I saw, in other words, I could walk through the police lines. I could walk around Antifa and stand in the crowds and watch them and stuff like this. And you can actually tell they're actually the leaders there. And then the people sort of look to them. They definitely are the sort of leaders. And unfortunately, that particular day at Stone Mountain, and then later on that day, I went to another demonstration in Rome, Georgia, and one of my main cameras broke and stopped working. I was using a small digital camera, which is really bad because you have to get up into somebody's face to use these digital cameras. But that's another thing we need. We need better sort of intelligence. But Antifa, coming back to how clever they are, is frightening. I was badly doxxed, like I said, about 7 weeks ago. Closed down our show. We lost all the stuff. But the thing is I was sort of not tipped off like somebody inside information, but somebody being smart. Two people in the movement in the core said, look at this woman. We believe that she's something to do with this. So anyway, so I looked at this particular woman. She's a PhD in cybersecurity at a very artsy-fartsy private college in North Carolina. So I started looking at her website and interviews she's done with the press, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And this woman, she boasts quite openly about sending 700-plus names to the SPLC, which is the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is a basically Jewish organization down in Birmingham, Alabama.
A Jewish terrorist organization always hunting down whites.
Yeah, I mean, and also they've got massive millions and millions and millions of dollars. A lot of it, this is hidden on offshore accounts, and everything I'm saying is somebody can fact check me. If you want to use Google or another search engine, everything I'm saying is totally true. Now, this woman sent over 700 names, et cetera, et cetera. They were sent with the SPLC to the Charlottesville City Police, which is a left-wing city council. The chief police is like black affirmative action. The town mayor manager was black. The mayor was actually a Jew who worked for Obama. Podesta, who was actually Hillary Clinton's main man during the elections and stuff like this. So you talk about Antifa and how well they're connected. Anyway, this woman boasts about handing over information to Antifa as well and doesn't really care what they do with it. But on her website, she boasts and shows how sophisticated the software is that she uses to find out information. And of course, most people are on Facebook or another organization, has absolutely total access to every part of Facebook's computers, memory, photographs.
Shit,
man. No, not lying. I mean, this is all out there. And then she also boasts. So I knew that a lot of the information that was used against us in the doxing it's even further than that. It was from very, very sophisticated sort of internet stuff. I mean, so one of some of the things that they found on me was a Craigslist. I don't know if you have Craigslist in South Africa.
No, but I've heard of Craigslist.
Is a way of advertising stuff for sale, like in your local neighborhoods or jobs, or you're looking for stuff, or it's just a sort of a big notice board. But anyway, they found a Facebook, a Craigslist posting supposedly about me, from 2011. So I can't see where that would be in the general public. That's not the word I'm thinking of, in the public domain, because it's old information.
Yes.
So I would say that, again, Antifa probably has access to Craigslist's information.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yes. So now they can get lots of personal stuff about people.
Absolutely.
Facebook and Craigslist at the very least.
Right. Then you add in VK, Telegram, Gab, all these other things, and everybody's posting, that I'm a good Nazi and here's a picture of Hitler's birthday cake. This type of nonsense. So this is basically just making it easy for them. And I knew that Antifa was sophisticated. I thought they were just like a bunch of Sherlock Holmes, and you sit down and you listen to a radio show, for example, and you pick up one little piece of information. Chris says well, I'm born just west of London. You know what I mean? Then they'll come up with another little snippet of information. And you, after a while, you put all these bits and pieces. Well, you know, I live in wine and horse country, you know, here in America. So you'd put that down. And, after a while, pretty much I might as well have, sent them my address and my life history. So you know, because they're not, they are very, very clever. But anyway, this other person, so there was some, which is actually a giveaway. So one, because of the sophistication of the internet searches and what have you, I knew that she was probably, or somebody working for her at her university in her computer classes was working, you know, so that she was one. Okay. So this is, so I put a name to one of the doxers. Then again, she's a bit of a, she denies being an Antifa, but she's part of this sort of World Workers Association or whatever it is, which is basically the Communist Party.
What? Yes, and I was about to say, if it's workers, then that's communism, straight off.
Absolutely. But anyway, but she boasts about working with a guy who uses the nickname Robert Lee. Now, he is actually a guy by the name of Robert Patrick Sean, who's been well-known working for the SPLC. See the other connection again? And I've actually met him in real life, and he told me about, oh, yeah, they pay me every day, you know, where they pay me to go to these rallies, take photographs, they fly me around the country, they put me up in hotels, they buy me my meals and my beer. They didn't know who it was at the time. They invited me to their hotel for free beers.
I wish I'd done it now,
but I went to another rally. As it was, you know, we left that rally, and we raced 45 minutes to another rally in another place. But anyway, with him, he had a website called Restoring the Honor, and it was really, he was after anybody had anything to do with the Confederate statues or believed in the, you know, the stars and bars, you know, the Confederate battle flag, et cetera. That was his thing. But also on my doxing was some old photographs of me. One I'd never even seen. I looked absolutely sick. I had a cold sore. My eyes were closed up.
Yeah.
And it was a terrible picture. I had no idea where the picture came from. Absolutely, where the hell did I get this picture? And another picture of me from years ago, I mean, long time ago, but I had a beard, I'd done some publicity photographs for a coffee company and some beef jerky and stuff. Anyway, so we all dressed up as cowboys and stuff like this. Anyway, so there's a photograph of that. But that photograph was taken down years and years ago for security reasons. So obviously, they'd been sitting on that picture. And again, her mention of this particular Robert Lee guy, who's this Sean Patrick Breen character, that they were working together. So I know who the two doctors or two, the two main doctors are. There's another journalist, but we can't like sort of put him into it at the moment, even know who he is. So this is how sophisticated these people are, you know, and obviously the SPLC's behind it. You know, you've got people like George Soros are behind it. You know, there's a lot of money there. You know,
that's the big thing. And I've noticed here in Africa that whenever the blacks are up to something, even the most violent blacks like Julius Malema and others, you will see that money flows to these blacks like a fucking river. And then the white right doesn't have a penny. But the blacks, right. The blacks have got so much money, they don't know what to do with it. There are blacks like Malema. He goes and buys himself a sports car. I'm not sure if he bought himself a Lamborghini. They have got so much money. The money just flows into their hands. And that says to me, Jews are at work.
Yep. Well, absolutely. I mean, the SPLC, I mean, was in the last year. There was two controversies, would you believe? One. Well, obviously, the head man now was a Jew, but he had to leave because of allegations of sexual assault on his staff. And the other one was his
nothing new there.
Right, but it'd be black. Some of his black employees have accused him of racism that they couldn't get on there. You know, to their position. This is true. This
excellent.
Is true. Honestly, excellent. You have to look this up. You know, and there's another organization called the Anti-Defamation League, and then not Hebrew, and but anyway, they've been convicted for burglaries and all sorts of stuff. You know, so these are not squeaky clean bunches of people, you know, but the ADL and SPLC, getting off the point a bit, they also prey on Jews, especially, who this whole Holocaust thing, because most Jews actually believe in the Holocaust, you know,
yes,
they really believe
definitely.
In it. Well, my family wasn't there, but that guy down the road, I think his grandmother went through the gas chambers, and they really believe this stuff. But anyway, so this is where most of the money comes from. And of course, they use it, this anti-white propaganda, as, well, you must be in the Klan, you must be a Nazi. And, you know, I mean, you know, the Holocaust, you know, everybody in the country has to pay homage to Anne Frank and her, you know, her nonsense.
Fake diary.
Right. But coming back to the Antifa thing, it's all sort of parcel. It's all part and parcel of this same sort of war on us. It's so very, very sophisticated. And again, the media, I'm talking to my mother, as I mentioned earlier on, and she's like, well, we all took a knee for this black guy. I said, did you know he's a convicted felon? He's just done 5 years for armed robbery. Okay. He had just about every drug in his system when he was, you know, they'd autopsied him. And yeah. he's also made porno movies.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Now,
so he's a porn star as well.
Yep. Now, there's a lot of other stuff coming in about this particular guy. The policeman who, you know, and I think the cop was probably a bit too rough, but I wasn't there. All I've seen is a little snippets of a film. But
you don't
this
know.
Guy was,
you don't know
this
what happened before, etc.
This was a big man. You know, I'm not talking fat or overweight. He was a giant. Now, the cop, who's been charged now with second-degree murder, they bumped it up from third degree, which is basically manslaughter. Now it's like you have to be premeditated or be cruel or, you know, it's not like just stabbing somebody. You stick the knife in and twist it around a couple of times. You know, that's the difference. And but anyway, he knew this black guy from doing security at nightclubs. So there's history between these two guys, you know. So what did that cop know that he wasn't going to let that black guy on the ground give him an inch, because he knew that he was a thug and it would probably pull his head off? Do you know what I mean? It's no good. It's
right.
One thing being strong and knowing martial arts and all this other stuff, because I'm a tough little guy. But the thing is, if you get somebody who's a real giant, who's really strong, and they get you in a, that's it, you're done. You know what I mean? So maybe this is what the cop, and he'll probably get found not guilty, and then they're going to burn down the whole universe, you know. But anyway, I suppose we're getting off the point a little bit about...
No, this is good stuff, Chris, because one thing I noticed about the communists here in Southern Africa, South Africa had so much unrest, and all of the unrest in South Africa was very similar, you know. They come up, basically what the communists do, what these Jewish communists do, is they look for anything. They were probably saying to themselves, I'm just guessing now, but I think this is very likely. I think that they were playing their COVID-19 game, and they thought that they could crash the country and bring it to a standstill. And now they've seen, no, this is not working well enough. We need more trouble. It's an election year. Trump is there, you know. And they, for them, I don't think that this story has any relevance, because in South Africa, it was the same thing. And if you actually read communist literature and the way these communists have worked everywhere, the actual argument that they are making has actually got very little to do with what is happening. What they are just looking for is an incident, any incident.
Absolutely.
If that guy was another black guy and he was killed in some other way, in something, they would have taken that and made that the issue. So it's got nothing to do with that this is particularly wrong or particularly this. Chances are, even, to be honest with you, chances are, there's a bunch of people sitting there, a bunch of Jews probably sitting there, looking through all the headlines, and they got like a list of top 20 incidents, and they say, well, you know, should we push this one or should we push that one?
Absolutely.
Okay, that one. Yes, let's use that one. And then they take that one. They make a whole fucking stink out of it, and now they burn down the country, kill people, cause all kinds of shit. And apparently it's all related to that one incident, but it's not. No, it's not.
Also, about the same time as they took down my show, 7 weeks ago, just before that, we lost the Right Voice radio show, we lost, I think, nearly 15 Facebook pages. And they were under different names. And what they were, we never put anything on there. And I use this as an example, like, you know, picture of Hitler's birthday cake, you know, the big swastika, you know, or a cross lighting for the Klan. We were not that stupid. You know what I mean? Well, let's go out and kill Jews and blacks tonight. You know, we never put anything like that down. On the pages that went down, and what we do is we click on them before the shows, and it would send out to all these different groups, different beliefs, you know, sort of white, right, people, you know, whatever. We sort of aimed at a different sort of audiences. The show's about to come on in an hour, etc. To our guesstimates, we lost 50,000 contacts. Okay?
Whoa.
Right. Now, even Antifa, Antifa says on their page that we had 50,000 listeners a week. So not 50,000, 30,000 listeners a week. Okay? Now, a lot of the information, they would come back to our, you know, the episode we're talking about. One of the problems why I couldn't get into that particular episode as we spoke off the air is because we closed down our website. It's not closed. It's shut private at the moment, and we may or may not open it back up. But anyway, it's because what happened is these Antifa that were going through and recording and also getting information, like I said, you know, that little snippet of information, you put it together with something else. And but anyway, so that's how people would listen to our show, not live, but they'd do the podcast. I mean, for example, we did an interview, our first interview, which is a 7-hour interview, uncensored, with David Duke. I had 40,000 listeners that week. 1 week. That's not going back and checking what happened after that week.
Hectic.
You know, so maybe it was 80,000 listens on that interview. I don't know. But anyway, Facebook closed down all those accounts. Also, about the same time, there's another application from Russia called VK.
I know VK.
Okay.
Yes.
So VK was closed down, not closed down, but we lost hundreds and hundreds of activists that had gone over to VK.
Wow.
Yeah, right. So because they were being chased off of Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. So they went on to VK because we thought it was safe. I didn't really use it, but I thought it's in Russia. So the Russians are on our side. You know what I mean? They're not going to censor us. Guess what? VK, you know, it was a young guy who founded VK, sold out a few weeks ago. He just sold the whole company for millions and millions of dollars to a Jew.
Oh, wow.
And all of a sudden, again, fact check this stuff, you know, all of a sudden, you know, they have access to who, all these names, you know, and stuff like this. Now, guess who mentions my name, which is a variation of my real name, on VK? Comes back to the lady in North Carolina, the PhD cyber expert.
Oh, wow.
Right. So they're adding VK and Facebook accounts, probably with other things as well, you know, and then so they're cross-referencing names, you know what I mean, and everything else. So the database that Antifa has, and I think it's probably the database is probably the computers, which is owned by the university there in North Carolina, because this is not sort of something you can put on a sophisticated PC.
Yes.
You know, this is like a business computer. And the software program, if you find this woman, I'll give that woman's name, not a secret.
Yes.
Her name is Megan, M-E-G-A-N Squire, as in English Squire. You know, and if you go on her website, she will show you the software she's using. They are using, because I'm sure that she's not working on her own. She's probably got a bunch of students doing this. Is very similar to what the national, you know, the NSA uses, the British GCHQ uses, the Israelis use. So in other words, what it is, and this particular software was developed for tracking phone numbers. So all of a sudden, you're out there, you know, this phone number phones this number and phones this number, and you can go back years and years.
Wow.
Oh, guess what? All the phone numbers, I think, since records were kept, of individual phone calls.
Yeah.
Guess where they're archived?
No.
AT&T, you know, Verizon, Bell South, all the American companies, okay? All of their records are archived and kept in Israel.
No.
Yes, which is 51% owned by the Israeli government.
Whoa.
Now,
that is
you go
crazy.
Back to the now, you go back to the software and you say, oh, here's Chris's phone number here. Who's he called? Bang. They can pull up all the phone numbers that I've called. And then they use that, then they'll go through all those phone numbers that I've called or I know. And then they will start to search the numbers that they've called. And then they can build this pattern, like
yes.
a 3D type of pattern and the connections.
Of
if
your...
you look on, right.
So now on, they know your network and
yes.
who all the people are who are talking together. They can build an organogram of your activities.
Right. Now, if you go to Megan Squires' website or whatever it is where she boasts, you know, I mean, there's a few big articles there. And I looked at the picture of what she saw, said, oh, my God. The software she's using is exactly the same as they're using for chasing like phone numbers and all these terrorist organizations and what have you. You know what I mean? Around the world, different phone numbers in different countries is exactly the same type of software. Now, that is some pretty sophisticated software. I do not believe for one second that this woman developed that software. I believe that she was probably handed. I mean, what country... It definitely wouldn't be the Brits or the Americans giving her that software.
I would also imagine, due to the sophistication, there's no ways that she wrote it herself. Being
no,
a computer programmer myself, right. These things will take a team of people a long time to write. Absolutely.
Thank you for reminding me. You, as a computer guy, you go and have a look at it, and I don't really understand computers like obviously you do. It blew my mind. I'm like, oh, my God, these guys are that sophisticated. I'm going to guess the connection, because he has SPLC, et cetera, and everything else, and obviously the Jewish connection to the SPLC, I'm going to say that probably the software was given to her by the Israelis. Now, I don't know that for a fact, but I would say that's probably what it is. And, you know, and she might actually just be a front for the Israelis.
Yes.
It could be, that it's not a bunch of students in North Carolina doing this. It's actually not Mossad, everybody claims Mossad, but it's probably just that army group, you know, people that watch the internet or they're, you know, so it could well be. And she's just a front for it. And, you know,
well, if I may ask a question, does she have sort of reddish, brownish hair?
Yeah, she looks like one of us.
Because I'm looking around here and I see that she's even done a TEDx talk.
Yep.
It says, using data science to understand online hate. And she's also now at a place called Elon University. And Elon,
yeah,
doesn't that sound a little bit Jewy?
It's a private, artsy-fartsy, independent sort of, you know, I mean, it's basically a big party university. I mean, you go there, mummy and daddy got enough money to get you into the school. You know, you write a couple of papers and you're probably going to get some type of qualification. It's a private university. So, again, because... without giving too much away, we wanted to know who owned the computers. Okay. Were the computers privately owned, or, you know, is it a private university or is it a public university? Because if it's a public university, then that changes if they're using the computers for possible criminal uses. And that's about as far as I'm going to go with that.
Okay. No, she seems to be around, this woman. And she could she could easily have targeted you because of the success of your show, because you've got quite a big listenership, quite an enormous listenership for a normal white right group. So
yep.
They could easily have targeted you and said, look, this group here, Right Voice, they're getting through to too many people. Because they knock people out. When Alex Linder was when Alex Linder was doing his VNN forum and he was really going great guns, they went after him like a dog, man. They hounded Alex left, right, and center. He and I have spoken about the things he went through. eventually Alex couldn't even get onto the internet. He literally had to go and pay somebody money to use their business line to their home. And they had to like secretly run their server from somebody's house because they could no longer function at all. That is how they came after them. So you can easily be a target simply because of your effectiveness. They need to shut you up. You know, the bottom line for these Jews really is that they've got to interject themselves into any discussions that whites have with each other. And they've got to stop white-to-white communication because whites will just spread the truth about Jews and everything else. And they literally need to stop us talking. They have to, because if they allow us to speak, we will not only know the truth about them, but the other thing also is that they need to divide us, and they've got to artificially create problems among us. And you know, the longer I've been in the white right and I've been observing things from my time here in South Africa, like I started about 20 years ago, I want to tell you, Chris, that the more I travel and meet whites, the more I realize that whites actually don't have problems, actually. The problems are artificially created, a lot of them. Mm-hmm. A lot of them.
I believe that knocking us out, knocking VK out, when I say us, the our show, knocking VK down, knocking out the Facebook, this all sort of, they knew that the election's coming up. Biden was not doing very good. They've lost their man, Bernie Sanders. Now, Bernie Sanders.
Oh, really? Did they hope Bernie would make it? Old Bolshevik Jew Bernie Sanders America. Well, can you believe it?
Bernie Sanders, right, was the favor of an organization called the Democratic Socialists of America. Now, I've seen these guys on universities and college campuses as soon as all the little kids, you know, they're usually about 18 or 19 when they go to college here in America. And of course, a lot of them, this is the first time they've really been away from home, rightly or wrongly, not making fun of them, just all of a sudden they're out there in the big world, you know what I mean? And God, there's people in all these clothes and they got face piercings and this is so cool, you know what I mean? God, they're smoking marijuana and you can just see it, like the excitement. Guess what? These tables. Boom, let's change the world. Democratic Socialists of America. The top guy in Richmond, Virginia, who runs what's called Seven Hills Antifa, he's the biggest recruiter in Richmond for the at the Virginia Commonwealth University, which has 60,000 students, okay? He's the main recruiter down there for the Democratic Socialists of America. Now, that's Bernie Sanders' group. They're the ones who, you know, Bernie, they're all out there, if you know, and so many now of Bernie Sanders' people in the campaign have been exposed on camera, you know, these secret cameras, saying that they're, you know, that they're communists and they don't care what they do and, you know, laughing and joking and what have you. And so I think what's happened is this may have been a probably, this is all about the same sort of time that Bernie went under and they realized they've lost their candidate. So I think if it had come to a normal election, you know, say Biden versus Trump, I think Trump would have had it. No problem at all. All of a sudden, like you said, the virus thing gets all sort of drummed up and is all made to, you know, wear masks, don't wear masks. How many people, you know, don't close the border, you know, don't upset China, you know, do this, do that. Trump couldn't do a thing right. No matter one day to the next, they change their minds.
Bingo. Now.
Right. You're right.
May I just interject there, my friend? It doesn't matter what Donald Trump does this year. Every move he makes is going to be wrong.
Absolutely.
they're going to tear him apart. They're going to blame him for COVID. They're going to blame him for not doing enough. They're going to blame him for every death. Yeah. They're going to blame him. They're going to blame him for the race riots. They're going to say he can't run a country. He can't keep the people happy. He destroyed the economy. They're just going to come up. It doesn't matter whether he goes left or right. It's going to be wrong. Everything he does is going to be wrong.
Yep. And so just coming up. So this is it. And again, you've got all your forces ready. Okay. You've got all the Bernie Sanders people are pissed. you know, the traditional, you know, the, sorry, the Democratic Socialists of America. You know, there are all these Bernie supporters all around the country, you know what I mean? They're like, shocked, you know what I mean? You know, they're going to get rid of their student loans. I mean, most American kids have student loans of $50,000 to $100,000.
Wow.
You know, staggering amount, you know what I mean? So all of a sudden, he's going to do, you know, and then all legalization of marijuana, you know, all this stuff, you know, and then, so all these things are sort of all coming together, like it's like this, all of the these little armies are all joining together, like this regiment's coming to join this regiment, et cetera,
yes,
et cetera, et cetera. And they're all getting stronger and stronger. And, of course, then, bang, they've got the opportunity. This black guy, you know, knee on the neck type of thing, bang, they jump on that bandwagon. And of course, then they put the whole Antifa, you know, I use the name Antifa because basically it's a loose organization, but it's what it is, okay? That organization is what it is. And of course they just put their plan into action, you know, burning down the, you know, the cities and everything else. I mean, I was going to keep a list of the amount of cities, you know, that have gone up. I mean, I know that there's five areas in New York, which have been blown up, burgled, you know, just, I think it's, Chelsea, Union Square, the Bronx, Brooklyn, and there's another place which I forgot about at the moment. So that's like five places in just in New York City, major districts. You know, it's like Philadelphia. I mean, just before that, you know, we talked about Philadelphia, you're getting armed citizens, for example, in South Philadelphia now, you've got the Italians, they call them the Italians, but obviously Americans have been here maybe 100 years, they call them Italian Americans, are actually patrolling the streets with guns.
Wow.
So we're that close. We're that close.
Wow.
Police officers have been shot here in America. You know, there's one with a bullet in the head. I don't think he's going to make it. Police officers are getting run over in the streets now.
And of these police officers who are getting killed and attacked, how many are white?
I think it's about a 50-50 type of thing. I think really because a lot of these cities that they're going crazy in, like Philadelphia and Baltimore and Washington, D.C., the majority of the cops are black.
Okay. So they're even killing black cops.
Yeah, yeah. So this doesn't make any sense. I mean, they're burning down black businesses. You know, so this is, you know, this is what they're saying is, and if you look, if you break down the username protesters, okay, just as a common name.
Yeah.
You do see, I think, a legitimate black community, maybe the more sophisticated blacks in the neighborhood, you know, maybe a few sort of followers who are pissed off, maybe, you know what I mean, of living in shitholes, having bad jobs. And I think they're like pissed off with the situation.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's a sort of legitimate. Now, I think they should get off their ass and get a better job and educate themselves. But let's just say, for example, that these are legitimate peaceful protesters, and I think there is a small percentage of them that are
then, the ones that are drawn into it believing that it's actually real.
Right now you add on that the criminal blacks who are out to smash things up. They're out to, they hate the police because they got thrown in jail for 3 years for dealing crack, you know, I mean, and then, you know, I mean, then they're robbing, you know, all the stores and everything else. So that's the second bunch, you know,
right,
I mean, the thugs,
right,
and the criminal element. Then you add the third bunch in. That's your whites, you know, whites who hate themselves.
Yes.
Antifa, the college kids, you know what I mean, who, you know, have been staying at home because of the coronavirus. Now, isn't that a bit funny? You've got all these university students and high school students and not at school. Another strange quinky dink there.
Oh, and wow. That, I didn't even think of that. That is a good point. So you guys are still not back at school either. Neither are we.
Now, but I don't know if that's, you know, just one of those things, but that's what you're seeing on the streets. You know, I mean, there was some white guys, and they're in, I believe they're in Kentucky, because Kentucky, as anybody knows in the world, has a lot of horses in that particular part, but they threw a firebomb into a horse trailer. And I'm guessing from the size of the trailer, it probably had 4, 6, 8 horses inside this trailer, which is getting towed by a big American pickup truck, you know, these big, yes. you know, six-wheeler things, and they're chasing it down the road and everything else. So, and it looked like to me, I think they've got the guy on video from his shirt, but these were white kids that threw this bomb into the, you know, so it's not even like they're, you know, so again, these white kids are not poor white kids.
Okay, now we're heading into that thing. These upper class whites whose children have turned into communists.
Yep, and they've been allowed to, they've been brainwashed since they were children, started with Sesame Street, you know, all the perversions of these different shows in the afternoons and going to school where the homosexuality is all right and it's okay to teach six-year-olds to masturbate. And people think, oh, you're going all over the place. It's all a death of a thousand cuts.
Yes.
Every little thing they're doing, the drag queens in the libraries, I don't know if you've seen that in South Africa.
No.
All right. No. All over Britain, and I don't know about Canada now, but I have a feeling it might be in Canada as well. And actually, Paul's a good guy. I actually talked to him as well, Paul Fromm. He's a decent enough guy. And sent me a beautiful present recently of a big old-fashioned Canadian flag. Very, very nice of him.
Oh, nice.
But anyway, what they're doing is they're taking these drag queens into libraries, and they've got all their funny clothes on, all their perversion and stuff like this, and, you know, and they're reading to, like, little children of, like, 3, 4, 5, 6 years old. Oh, yes. And again, for all your listeners in, you know, out there, double-check everything I've said on your show, Jan, because I'm not a liar. I might get the date wrong. You know what I mean? It wasn't the 19th, it was the 27th. Or, you know what I mean? Something along those lines. But other than that, I might have the wrong city or something like this, or it was 10 years ago, it's 5 years ago. But other than that, everything I'm saying is the truth.
My goodness.
No exaggeration.
I mean, basically, the Jews are gathering together their army of degenerates, some of whom are blacks, some of whom are criminals, some of whom are the totally propagandized children of the elite.
Yep.
You know, even here in South Africa, I warned my own family. I said to them, be careful of sending your children to the university. Your child can come back a communist.
Absolutely. My boy did.
Is that so? That happened to you? Whoa.
Now he's completely come over to our way of thinking.
Excellent.
Now, but he came back and we were doing some roofing work, and him and his buddy, who went to the, funny enough, it's a Berkeley or Berklee School of Music over in Massachusetts, not to be combined with the university I talked about earlier on the West Coast.
Yeah.
And they start talking about institutionalized racism. Like, what the heck?
Yes, there you go.
And I'm like, well, hang on a second, dear. No, I understand it. I understand
white privilege.
Right, but I mean, I was starting to come after, where did you hear this stuff? Where, you didn't go to school to learn political science or social workers, or you sort of understand, you know, expect that sort of crap out of that, but, you know, not learning a language. And anyway, so it was quite frightening, and I was coming out of things, and, you know, I think probably, I don't know, we're talking about however, but it came out, and that was an eye-opener. I thought, oh, my God, what a bad parent I've been. I've worked hard. You can see the scars on my body from providing for my family and, you know, and everything else. And all of a sudden, I thought, what was it all for? I just handed my baby over to these communists and everything else. And, you know, I mean, this is what happened to
him. The Jew has climbed into your son's head, and now your son is fighting you.
Okay, let's go back to Charlottesville. Charlottesville, there's a black mayor, a black vice mayor there. His name can't be, he's gone. Anyway, West Bellamy. Is it West Bellamy? Yeah, I believe it is. Anyway, he was boasting about when he walks into a room that all the white girls all get weak-kneed because he's got to, you know, and all the men sort of scuttle off, you know, because they're all scared of this big, powerful black guy, and they all know he's well-hung and all this type of stuff.
Oh, God.
This is the stuff he was boasting about on his Twitter account.
Yeah.
A guy by the name of Jason Kessler, right, started to put this stuff out there. And, of course, they went after him. You're a Nazi. This is just a partially autistic guy who didn't like what he was seeing that this vice mayor was doing, whatever he was.
Yes.
Anyway, so they went after him. So eventually, the the communists, the lefties, and the Jews in Charlottesville, Virginia, went after him, and all of a sudden he got involved in, oh, then they're trying to take down the statues, you know, the Confederate, you know, generals and what have you there in Charlottesville. So he got sort of involved, and of course this particular vice mayor was like the big wheel. He would go by every morning to the statues and spit on it.
No.
Okay? Oh, yeah. He would walk past the statues and spit on it. And when I first thought there's a, let's say, deliberately go out of his way, walk 50 yards up, and it was well known.
Go and spit on a statue of a white man, a Confederate.
Right. Absolutely. So spitting in public is against the law. It was against the law. Now, coming back to all the perversion, guess what he was also on? He was on the Board of Education of Virginia, which has a few million people now.
Wow.
He was on the book review board for textbooks for the schools. Wow. So this is the pervert who's boasting about how well hung he is as a black boy. Okay. You see what I'm saying? Spitting on. This is the guy who was deciding with another bunch of communists or whatever you want to call them in Virginia. Now, he was like run out eventually. Remember, his boss is a Jew that worked for Podesta, Clinton, and Obama. Okay, you know, and they're gone now. You know, they had all these other ones. You know, we handed over nearly 1,000 documents about who's who, who's what, the corruption, even their internal one that the city of Charlottesville did, talked about the corruption and hiding text messages and destroying emails and putting pressure on the people who, you know, who asked questions by the, you know, the police chief. What did you tell them? What did you tell them? This type of stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway. As of this morning, I heard that the governor of Virginia is going to take down the massive, beautiful statue of Robert E. Lee in Richmond.
You kid me. In Richmond. Good Lord.
If you look at a picture in a book or a tourist book or something, guess what they're going to show you in Richmond, Virginia?
The statue of Robert E. Lee.
They're taking down the biggest thing there. Now, if they take that down, that means what's called Monument Avenue, right, which is loads of different statues. Guess what? Arthur Ashe is up there, you know, the half-white, half-black homosexual tennis player. You know, there's other statues there now. It's not just all Confederate white boys. Now, there's a lot of expensive houses in that part of Richmond. Right. People boast, I live on Monument Avenue. Now, if they take down those statues, people are going to move out of Monument. Now, those big houses, some of them are like 10, 12 bedroom houses. What do you think is going to happen to them houses? They're going to be turned into rentals. OK, the blacks going to go in, and then all the adjoining streets that make up that area, the Monument area and Kerry Street and all this, they're all going to go. Right. So the whole place is going to be gone.
I can understand that because, you know, one of the most horrific things I saw in America was, especially when I was in Memphis, my host took me around to many parts of Memphis. And he'd take me to place after place and he'd say, you see this suburb that we're driving through now? You see only blacks live here? Well, you know, 10 years ago, only whites lived here. And another place 20 years ago, whites lived here, but now it's all black. And so it just goes on and on and on. The whites are always moving and the blacks are always moving in. Whites are moving out, blacks are moving in. White flight, unbelievable, the scale of white flight in the United States. That thing has to stop.
Let me get back to this black guy, Wes Bellamy.
Yeah,
I think I've got his name wrong. I think Wes. Anyway, so forget that name. I think Wes Bellamy. I think he's a British guy or something, maybe another black guy or something. But anyway, doesn't really matter. Okay, but his name. So the guy's now, as of this morning, is taking down the statues. I heard the other day he has given this black guy, the one who's on the Board of Education and the one who's hung like a monkey or something like this, a job working for him in Richmond, Virginia, as part of the government.
Good God. You know how these blacks move up in government and so forth in the United States. Right. And I mean, that goes for Obama himself. He's a faggot. He's a communist.
Yep.
And look at how they fucking move up. And that is no accident at all, Chris. That's Jews at work, man.
Now, what's called the birthers, you know what I mean? The birth certificate people. To this day, we have not seen Obama's birth certificate. That I'll never get. That's really getting off the point here a bit, But anyway, but coming back to this whatever his name is there in Charlottesville, Antifa, well-known Black Lives Matter, Black Panthers, and boast about his connections to Antifa. If you want to see a lynching, those guys, eight guys that were put on trial for all the rioting and stuff like this, and they had their rights. A federal judge said that that Charlottesville had to give them their demonstration, their Unite the Right demonstration, and also the judge told them. Now, helicopter crash, okay, in Charlottesville the morning of the event.
No, didn't know about
this. Well, I knew about it right from the word go. We knew it was the governor's helicopter. We knew that the governor's personal pilot got killed. Check this, people. Check this out. Albemarle County, which is the county around Charlottesville, one of their deputies was on board. I don't know why. But anyway, he got killed as well. Just came out a few weeks ago, two or three weeks ago, the governor was actually on that helicopter, had just been dropped off. The governor said, put me down here. The pilot said, this is too dangerous to drop you here. Could I get hit? A vortex taken back off. And it's one thing when you drop the engines, but when you whack those propellers right to pull you back up, it caused a vortex like he thought, and it put him into the power lines, and both guys got killed. Now, that's McAuliffe. Terry McAuliffe. I suspect he's going to be running for all sorts of office soon. Virginia is a springboard into Washington, D.C. Now, Terry McAuliffe is doing a book tour and a lecture tour with a Jewish lawyer. She's a woman, lesbian. And again, guys, check this out. Check this out. Okay.
Yeah.
This blows my mind. I mean, like, you can't make this stuff up. But she is the one, the biggest Jewish lawyer in this country that promoted gay marriage.
Okay.
Now, she's the one who's suing everybody and their uncle who went to the Charlottesville Unite the Right rally.
Oh, wow.
And Terry McAuliffe does the tour with her. Do you know what I mean? So, but I didn't know that Terry McAuliffe was there on the ground. Why would he be there on the ground? Well, you know, on a building or overlooking the thing. You know what I mean? What I'm saying? Why was he there? So it comes back to the whole thing about how, you know, McAuliffe. Now, McCabe, have you heard of McCabe?
No.
He's the second in the FBI, right? He's the, you know, McCabe was there. His wife was run for a position there in Virginia. She was backed for hundreds and hundreds of thousands by Hillary Clinton's, the Clinton Foundation. it goes on and on. So all those 1,000 documents I mentioned a few minutes ago that we handed over to the FBI, I know it was over 700. I'm guessing it was probably nearly 1,000 the time we'd finished it. You know, photographs, videos, names and addresses, and also timestamps where they were, like in the whole rally. So that way you can go back to them. And you know, we confirmed this with Facebook things and everything else, and we had a guy down in Florida put all this information. So when it's handed over to Comey and McCabe, and anybody turns on the TV, you'll see that McCabe and Comey's names are mentioned as of today, even for the corruption of the Obama government for going after Trump. You know what I mean? With all this Russia thing and all the rest of this other nonsense. This is how thick Antifa and all these people are. And then the media.
They are well. The bottom line is they are unbelievably well connected in the establishment with Jewish money. It's just coming out their fucking ears. They can do things that none of the guys on the white right can even dream of doing.
Nope. And the more and more and more it goes on. I mean, sometimes you know, I get up in the morning and I think, why am I even bothering? You know, it's just. I suppose we have no choice, because I personally believe that the South, the old South here, this is the line in the sand. This is why they want to take down the Confederate statues and the flags and everything else, because when they destroyed the Confederacy or the leftovers of the Confederacy and, you know, the great-grandchildren of the Confederates, this is it. They take away our First Amendment. They take away our guns. This is it. This is the line in the sand for white people around the world. There's no hope.
Do you believe that the only real resistance that's left in America is still the South even now?
Yes.
Wow, that's interesting. That is interesting, Chris.
I think there's one, once in a while you see a glimmer of hope. When Northam, who's now the governor, you know, who's going to give that job to the book guy who runs the education and the pervert, you know, with the monkey bit, monkey willy. They tried to take away the guns, okay, really brought it in, and I think a few Democrats crossed the line and said, we're not good. I think for the first time is most white voters, sort of working class, blue collar, people living in the country, well, I don't care about the homos. They're all up in D.C., you know. They're in Charlottesville. They're in Richmond. You know, it's over there. You know, I don't care about that.
It's far away. It doesn't touch me.
Right, exactly. I don't care about the drugs, whatever. But this is the first time when they start talking about guns, and the official number was 20,000 people in Richmond, Virginia, but the estimates go up to 40 to 60,000 people at that gun rally in there.
Yes, one earlier this year.
Yeah, I stayed away I know Richmond very well. I do business down there, but the thing is, I knew that they would make it as hard as possible. So pretty much what they did, the city of Richmond is actually a fairly small place.
Okay.
Pretty much what they did is they closed every car park nearly, except for sort of, you know, the ones they didn't have enough power to close down, private areas, in the city of Richmond, Virginia. So basically you had to walk to the county line, which is Henrico, to park your car.
That may account for a lot of the film footage. You see these people walking.
Absolutely. So they deliberately closed.
Oh, no goodness.
Okay. So in other words, a lot of people turned up, older people, and then they can't park anywhere. So next thing they said, I've got to walk 3 miles to get to the rally.
Okay.
So how many people
yes.
did turn up?
Clever. You know, that is interesting because, you know, it again points to the sophistication, the sheer sophistication of your enemy trying to, you know, that's the shocking part about America. You know, when I heard in the past about communists in America, I find it such a hard thing to believe. I'm like, communists in America? You mean they are like real communists? They actually think like communists? And the truth is, yes. And they hate America, and they hate everything the white man has done. And they actually live in the United States, and they hate everything the United States stands for. It still makes my mind reel. I can't believe that you can be that fucked up.
This is even bigger than just United States. The media in Canada is talking bad today about the blacks all around the world. The people all around the world are taking a knee like my mother from Great Britain. You know what I mean? Believing that, you know, that this is all wrong. And I was telling her months ago, I said, Mum, I said, we're getting ready. We have water. We have guns. We have propane. We have gasoline, petrol, you know, food. I said, you know, we're getting ready. You know, it's, you know, that's just talk. You know, and I said, really? So this morning I heard about the armed Italians up there in Philadelphia. So, I mean, they don't stand a chance in numbers. The Italians, you know, there's like a white area as well over to the east, which is like older Irish families, you know. But, I mean, Philadelphia is a black city. If you look at how many whites versus blacks, they're outnumbered probably 7-3 or at least double numbers, you know. So they probably have a lot of choices here to pick up a gun. And again, guess who the governor of Pennsylvania is? Tom Wolf.
Okay? A Jew.
Wow. So, you know, now, two cities in Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh and then Philadelphia, basically control the voting now of the whole state of Pennsylvania. So if you're a white guy living in the country, blue-collar working man, you're basically being outvoted by two cities. And it's the same in Virginia. Northern Virginia, Richmond, Charlottesville, and then the area around Virginia Beach and Chesapeake. If you look at the rest of Virginia, white, you know what I mean? But they're outnumbered now. We actually are outnumbered. So what's happening?
Are they gerrymandering? Are they changing the way that the voting works?
It's not gerrymandering because it's been done without changing borders. But what they're doing is they're just bringing in, more voters.
They're just bringing in more non-whites, and that's that. Okay. Right.
I mean, if you look at Obama, go back to him. Where did he stick all these refugees?
No, I don't know.
Let's see, Sudanese, Ethiopians, Eritreans, Somalians, big city, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Okay. Minneapolis.
There you go. So all of a sudden, bang. I mean, did you know that a black cop shot a white woman last year and is the biggest compensation ever handed out on a police shooting?
No.
Right, because it's, I've got it up here on the screen because I sent a screenshot of it to my mother in England. Oh, these poor blacks are always getting killed by white cops. No.
No, it's because you only hear the news when it's a white cop doing it. You don't hear the other news.
70% of people killed by cops are white, and the numbers are actually, the blacks actually get away with it more because the cops, every time they deal with a black, are scared to death to pull a gun because they know what's going to happen.
Now, that's the other thing, is intimidation of the white police. You see,
absolutely.
You see, one of the things that I see with this stuff happening is, again, the similarity to South Africa, is in South Africa, because it is the most highly developed country in Africa, South Africa functioned as a first world state. And they went and they used the ANC, the African National Congress, the communists who now run this country. They used to talk about their strategy for how to beat, let's call it apartheid, but basically how to beat the whites. And they settled on a strategy that they called making the country ungovernable.
Right.
And so the whole purpose of everything is to break down the system so that basically break down law and order and make it so that the government starts losing control of the country. That is their game. In the end, in most ways, they failed, but they tried really hard and they caused lots of trouble. And for them to run, for them to have protests and things was nothing. In fact, Chris, we have protests and riots to this day. There are so many protests in South Africa, even now, that let me tell you, if I say this to you, I've sat and thought about this many times. If I had to name every single protest that happens every day, there'd be protests in South Africa every single day. There are so many that you can't keep track of it anymore. I stopped counting 20 years ago. And nowadays, when I just look at the latest news that comes out from whites about protests, my conclusion is that I would not be surprised if in the last 50 to 60 years that here in South Africa that we've had hundreds of thousands of protests.
Yep.
Not thousands, hundreds of thousands. Because they have these things everywhere. In every small town, they're always busy blocking a road, setting something on fire. They are striking today. We've had this as an ongoing thing for years and years. And even under black rule, the blacks are in charge now. They can make all the rules they want, and still they're apparently unhappy all the time. They're striking all the time, and it just never stops. But the core of the thing, though, is that they were trying to also go after the police. So you've got this boogeyman called police brutality. And so now they're like, oh, the police are brutal. All these fucking liberals and Jews and commies are saying the police are brutal. Meanwhile, the police are the only people who are trying to keep the country, who are keeping you safe in your bed at night.
Yep.
And if they make it, and if they hammer away at the white guys, then the white guys, for the sake of their own career, are not going to really shoot. And it just totally starts breaking the system down. But that's what they do. That's what Jews and blacks do. They break the system down, and they're trying to break your system down. It's horrific. I just, you know, the things they get away with in your country. I mean, the taking down of statues, and how much damage have they really caused, Chris? Since this rioting has started,
it's staggering. I mean, the first night of the in Minneapolis, there was 170 buildings were destroyed the first night.
No, 170.
170, and yeah. So of course now, like I said, I mentioned there was five neighborhoods that I know of in New York, and I probably need to keep a track. You know, I mean, there was like in my little town near me. The county seat. It's probably no big deal now. Everybody knows where I live. It was like Leesburg, Virginia. There's a Confederate statue, a Confederate soldier, and that was attacked the other day down there. This is in a rich place, and nobody cares. It's like on the, you know what I mean? It's around the corner from the courthouse. It's not that big of a deal. It's not like you, oh my God, look at this. I'm so offended, this statue there. But I've got a couple of notes here. Come back to South Africa. You've got two people that work with the Jews there. You know, very sort of famous. One is Jeremy Corbyn, worked with the Jews in South Africa, and he boasts about how he would drive around in a car with a white guy beside him who was actually a Jew, and the ANC guy would actually pretend to be the chauffeur, and that's how they get through the police barriers, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then, of course, another...
So Jeremy Corbyn, he's a white communist. So he and the Jew...
That's what I was going to go, yeah. So also he worked with the IRA. Of course, he denied working with, like, you know, Jerry Adams and all the rest of it. But his black girlfriend, would you believe, ugly black girlfriend from back in the good old days, you know, he was trying out a bit of, a bit of strange. But anyway, she's gone public now and said, oh, yeah, these IRA guys, these strange Irish people would turn up in the middle of the night and they would be drinking and getting drunk together and singing Irish Republican songs, you know what I mean, like IRA songs. So she's sort of gone and sort of exposed him for his connect. Now, he's no longer the Labour Party leader in Britain. But, of course, another person who was well connected to the Communist Party and the Jews in South Africa was Gandhi.
Yes.
Again, I've mentioned this to you before. But then let's go back to Sinn Féin in Ireland. Sinn Féin means ours alone. It's the political wing of the IRA, the Irish Republican Army. Now, in modern Irish history, there's now a group, I think, called the Continuity IRA. But basically what's called the Provisional IRA was based in Belfast. And they were pretty much told the normal IRA command in sort of the Dublin area that they were going to do what they wanted to do and do it themselves. Anyway, and Sinn Féin, like Gerry Adams, Martin McGuinness, Bernadette Devlin, all well-known communists. We knew their communist connections. When the rich Americans would come over, you know, could be their Irish ancestors, they'd put on their Irish tartan trousers and their green jackets and, you know what I mean? They'd, you know, come over and drink their Guinness and sing IRA songs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, you know, people like Gerry Adams and that in Sinn Féin offices would take down all the pictures of Karl Marx and Castro and Guevara. And they said, I'm not making this up. They would put up pictures. They put the crucifix up and a picture of the Pope and, you know, the Irish harp and all this stuff. I mean, the Americans would get out their checkbooks and pay all this out. And I'm not making this up. There was an organization called NORAD, which was based out of New York, and they would send all the guns over. Actually, the main gun runner was a guy by the name of George Harrison, would you believe? Same name as the
singer. Yeah.
Yeah.
But are you saying that Sinn Féin got weapons straight out of New York?
Oh, God, yeah. I know a friend of mine actually turned up in a bar when they auctioned off I think it was an M16. He was high up in the Marine Corps, U.S. Marine Corps, and it came in with notches actually on the gun for how many British soldiers it had killed. And he was frightened to death because, one, it was disgusting. He didn't like the Irish, fighting against the Brits. But also he was scared for his security clearance that he would be associated with it. But this had come back to Sinn Féin. And the whole gun running between the United States, because the Americans have fed propaganda as well. Sinn Féin, the biggest party now pushing, that in Gaelic means ours alone, okay? The biggest party pushing for mass immigration into Ireland of dark-skinned immigrants and refugees is Sinn Féin.
Oh, wow, wow. Because we noticed that Sinn Féin had links to the ANC.
Yes, and McBride. Yeah. Black guy called McBride. He was the one that blew up a cafe or something.
McBride. He blew up a restaurant, and his reward for that was he was made one of the highest ranking police chiefs in South Africa. This fucking terrorist McBride.
Right. Absolutely. If you look back on that particular book, McBride, we're talking about, one of his great grandfather or grandfather was actually the McBride from the IRA days, the Irish Volunteers, who was a terrorist in Ireland. Oh, yeah.
Okay, because he's coloured. He's mixed race.
Right. He is mixed race as well. But if you look at, say, James Connolly, who was another one of these 1960 martyrs there in Dublin, called the Easter Uprising. Of course, the British executed him. He was born in Scotland, in Glasgow. A lot of these guys were actually not even Irish. They moved to Ireland and stuff like this and got back. Anyway, Connolly was well known. His parents were well known as Irish immigrants who were part of the whole Marxist communist movement. And he went to Ireland and to stir up shit. You know, so you look at other people as well. So, coming back to going all the way back, in history, what was that, 1916? So it's pre-1916. So that's like over 100 years ago. You've still got this sort of communist connection and stirring up the sort of working class. And then you have other people like William Butler Yeats, you know, the author, you know, the poet. And, of course, again, white privilege. Yeah. You know, it goes on, you know, Michael Collins, you know, I mean, white privilege again. He was, you know, had a good education, was sent to England, joined the GPO, and, you know, the Brits taught him everything and gave him an apprenticeship, and he was doing very, very well living with his auntie in London. And of course, he didn't want to fight for the British, so he went back to Ireland and started killing Brits. I mean, it goes on and on and on, but he was well associated again with the socialists as well, you know, so. You know, Griffiths and everything else. And so if you go back, because like I said, they all sort of know each other somewhere back in history. You know, and there's another thing I was going to mention. You know, you talked about killing, destroying, you know what I mean, destroying the country.
Yes.
You know, the communists would want to destroy the country. They don't care who they take out and hurt or whatever, because they want control.
Then absolutely.
The communist leaders are not going to go without. They're still going to have their big cars, their helicopters, you know, their nice meals, you know, their caviar, their champagne. You can look at any communist country in the world. Mao Zedong, never, every picture of him, he was a fat bastard. You know what I mean? He was never a picture, you know, even after the Great March, he was still a fat man. And, but anyway,
that's
if you look at, say, Catherine the Great, who was German, when she moved to and eventually became the Empress, she was actually, I think, got rid of her husband, in fact, the Emperor, because he was useless. She brought over lots and lots of German farmers and said, we need decent farmers in this country, and we can feed our people, and we can make the country better. And, of course, where did they settle? In the Ukraine.
Ukraine, I was going to, yeah.
Right, so who did the Soviets and the Bolsheviks take out, the Jews take out?
You know, the Ukrainians.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, so very interesting. Well, here in South Africa, the blacks are making big money. Even with COVID lockdown, they banned liquor, they banned alcohol, and then one of the government ministers was discovered to be making big money out of basically running a black market of cigarettes and stuff.
Yep.
But these people, these blacks, they got money coming out their ears. You know, it's the white man who seems to be getting poorer and poorer everywhere. So, Chris, but in America now, what is the situation like now? Because I mean, every day I've been hearing something. How are things looking now? Is there still violence? Where is it? How many cities? What can you tell me?
It's basically everywhere.
Really?
I haven't really seen a great deal in the last couple of days because I was doing work and I was on a mission. I think I told you, I'll explain my mission I was on.
Yes.
So I did pretty good. I'm not going to give away too, you know, pretty much. Anyway, it's a good successful mission. We need a win once in a while. It was a win.
Okay, excellent.
Okay, that's all I can say. But anyway, but
You got to do some things covertly. We have cannot function without that. Right.
So it was good. It's legal and everything else. It's just, you know, but of course, you know, it's a way of messing up the other side. You know, let's just put it that way.
Beautiful.
You know, legal, the other side. So I didn't see a lot of television, you know, and again, we were messing around, getting all these connections worked out and stuff, and I didn't watch the television. But like I said, I heard about Philadelphia, the problems pulling down the statue of the mayor, Rizzo. And again, now they're talking about bringing down the R. Robert E. Lee statue. And that's all a bit of a weird one there, because who knows what's going to happen? Is it going to be the thing that all the whites say no, enough is enough, and they all come out in civil war?
I don't think so.
You know, if they take down that statue and nobody does anything about it, I mean, and then it's almost like that's it. You know,
you'd lose faith in your fellow whites.
Yes, I don't know if I'd give. I'd probably give up on my deathbed. I mean, or you know, so that's probably because I'm in for the long run. But come back to the different cities. I mean, Santa Monica. Anybody's heard of Santa Monica?
No.
That's the rich part of Los Angeles.
Okay.
You've got San Francisco's going up. Oakland, which is across the bay in San Francisco. Oh, there's a big lot of Jewish immigrants who moved to Los Angeles after the war. Apparently, the blacks have been looting all their shops as well. I can't think what the name of it's called. I want to say it's Chelsea again. Actually, I might have said Chelsea, New York, and I might have just been – there is an area called Chelsea. Maybe it's Chelsea in Los Angeles. Dallas is going up. Detroit's going up, Chicago, St. Louis, Kentucky's problems, Cincinnati's got problems, Columbus, Ohio's got problems. Obviously, I said about Richmond, Virginia.
It would not surprise me if they're deliberately trying to spread it around the country, and then they say, oh, the whole country was on fire. Everybody was angry. Meanwhile, they created the problem to begin with.
Right, and my mum said, you know, I said, oh, you're in the minority over there. Like, really? But anyway, Richmond,
yes.
I haven't confirmed this story, whereas a white family's house was set on fire, and the blacks stopped the fire brigade from getting there and putting the fire out, and whites died in the fire. I've heard about that. Manassas, Virginia, which is the battlefields of the Confederacy, like the Battle of Bull Run, second. There was riots there on the battlefield. That means now they're going to destroy the battlefield and take down all the monuments on the battlefield.
It's very interesting that they are going after historical things in the United States. It's right. So much. They've got such a focus on that. Maybe the goal is to destroy pride and to make and to belittle. You know, maybe it's more a psychological warfare thing to make the you know, to push the white guilt thing. Oh, you're bad Confederates. You're bad white people. Even the North are bad white people. You know, everybody's bad, and everybody is bad, so pay us $1 trillion for slavery.
I mean, my question to that is, you know, some of the reparations comes up again today. So the other thing, so if a black right is having a hard time in America, but his family who actually came from the West Indies or came from Africa, you know what I mean, not as a slave, you know what I mean, actually immigrated over here in the 1960s or last week, do they get reparations? What happens if you're half white and half black? Does that mean you get a half payment? I mean, where does it stop? This is bloody serious. You're laughing, but the thing is, this is serious. I mean, they've already got affirmative action. I mean, you want to go and get a job for the federal government? Guess who's the bottom of the list? The white man. Guess who's above the white man?
That is insane. You know,
you're the last one deliberately. They pick from the very, very top, and they work their way down. And the top of the list is usually like Native Americans.
Is that
and then
so?
None just below that's like blacks, and then there's, you know, people of color, you know, so it's unbelievable.
Something I want to mention before I forget.
I made some notes.
I've also been making some notes here. Is a question, you know, one thing I want to tell you is that I've listened to these liberals making the argument
that the way that the whites of South Africa, you know, that's another thing about the Jews. Jews will make an argument in one country that is the opposite of the same.
Absolutely.
You know, it doesn't matter where they are. They'll just tell the lie that's going to work in that place.
Absolutely.
And so because of that, they will contradict themselves. Like, I don't know, I think you've probably been too busy. You haven't seen some of the videos I put up. There's the Jew, Ronnie Kasrils, who was in the South African Communist Party, and he became a minister in the government. He held very high positions. Anyway, this guy he launched his third book, and I went to a book review, and I actually had a chance to ask him some questions, and I recorded the question and answer session. And in there, there had been discussions. It just shows you how they lie, because in America, the Jews say that they're non-white. But right. In South Africa, here we are sitting at this book review, which was organized by a Jew, and most of the people there were either English or Jewish. And as they're sitting and talking, they're busy talking about we Jews and we whites.
Right.
And Kasrils says, you know, oh, I like to talk to a white audience, which is all bullshit. But, you know, here they are talking we Jews and we whites in South Africa. But in your country, they'll say, no, we're not white. So, you know, just the Jew will tell any lie that is necessary for him to gain an advantage at that point in time. Alex Linder also makes these same points himself. And so, you know, these people are so hypocritical.
Their books actually says they are. I mean, one of my, without giving away the actual Facebook page, but one referred to, let's say, the Goys or the Goyim. And, you know, so in their books, it's quite all right to rape, steal, kill. We can't kill a Goy. You get somebody to kill them. That way you don't have the blood technically on your hands, even though you order somebody to do the killing. That's okay. You can order somebody to do the killing according to their books, their religious books. And, you know, if you're one of the Goyim, the Goy, you're fair game. They can lie, cheat you, say anything.
Absolutely.
Nothing. That's their book says. That's not us saying that. We're just repeating what they say themselves. You know, and I've had a sort of conversations with a few blacks, and I had a black over here fairly recently turned up with somebody. And I sort of brought it up to him. He's a smartish guy, been in the Navy, et cetera, et cetera. Not the smartest guy I've ever met, but he was not stupid either. But I said, you know, you guys are getting used, you know, and I don't know much about this, but going back to 20 plus years in America, there was this East Coast versus West Coast rap thing. Then they had all the different clothes, you know, they had to wear all these certain clothes and have a gold tooth and walk around like Mr. T, who's in that A-Team
yes.
movies, all the gold chains and the haircut and talking like this and, you know, acting. And the thing is, like I said, who do you think is selling you this Chicago Bulls jacket? Who do you think selling you that gold tooth? Who do you think's making all the money between these two arguing black guys? Who do you think's making you act like an idiot jumping up and down on TV? Who owns MTV? He's like, I said, it's the Jews.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Stop being stupid and picking on Whitey. I said, we didn't do it. Maybe some did it. But I said, as black people own slaves. I said, well, you're fighting me and I'm fighting you. Our lives are destroyed.
Yes.
And we're just doing the dirty work of the Jew. And that's what they're doing. It's divide and conquer. You know, death of a thousand cuts. I love that expression.
Very well said. Now, what I wanted to also get at when talking about these Jews and the arguments they make in different countries is that I've noticed these liberals and Jews in the United States, they're making arguments where they say, well, you see, the reason that South Africa went down is because they weren't liberal enough and they were standing in the way of the black man, and therefore the black man got angry, blah, blah, blah. So we therefore need affirmative action. We need to not do the stupid things that the stupid whites of South Africa did. We must be cleverer than them. We must therefore be liberal. But you know something that I will predict to you, my friend, is that by going down the liberal path, making Obama the president, allowing all these blacks to move up to high positions. You are actually giving these people the chance to destroy America. And it should be quite obvious. I find it quite unthinkable. You know, what's her name? Obama's wife and so forth. You know, these people, they hate America. They hate America. And yet they are the top officials of America. And I'm like, there's something very fucking wrong here.
Well, Obama's daughter got busted the other day at some sort of demonstration. And then there's the mayor of New York, de Blasio. Now, his wife is black, and he's got these, you know, gollywog-looking children. I think his daughter got arrested as well. And there was a woman of color. I don't know if she was in D.C. D.C. or New York. She's a lawyer, and she got caught with a Molotov cocktail, a petrol bomb, and her bail was set at $250,000 cash. And one of her law buddies came in there and put down $250,000 cash to get her out of jail. So they think, I mean, if one of my coworkers was throwing petrol bombs at somebody, I certainly wouldn't go and get them out of jail.
Absolutely.
But Michelle Obama, we don't believe as a woman anyway. We used to call her Michael Obama. And, you know, because of, you know, I mean, so many people have come public now and said that Obama was a homosexual drug dealer.
Yes.
And he's money by working as a rent boy, which is a male young prostitute there in Hawaii. You know, and his mother apparently was like a bit of a stripper, and I think she had Jewish blood as well. And
yes, she was Jewish, yes.
And I also said, you know, that this guy goes to these top schools, you know, in America and what have you, you know, never really been in black neighborhoods until he's got through all the, you know, the universities and stuff. When he joined, I think it was Columbia Law School or one of the law schools, he actually said that he was a foreign student. He used a different name and said he came from Indonesia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And again, his father was Ugandan. No, is it Ugandan? Yes, it was. I believe it was Ugandan. Was it Kenya? No, Kenya.
Kenya. Kenya. Kenya.
And he registered a baby with the British authorities in Kenya, and apparently Hillary Clinton went over to Britain and actually wanted to see the records, and the records were no longer in London. I think they've been archived to Kent or Surrey or Sussex or somewhere, and actually went down there and looked at the actual records. And of course, you know, this has been going on for a long time, you know, in those days, you know, well, how did they get from, you know, from Africa to Hawaii? Well, you know, Africa's on the east coast. I mean, Kenya is on the east coast of Africa.
Yes.
You know, I know it's still got across Pacific, but there's ways you can hop, you know, from maybe south, you know, from Kenya, South Africa to New Zealand or Australia, you know, I mean, over to Hawaii. I mean, back in those days, you didn't even have to have a passport to carry a baby on the plane.
Okay. Very interesting. So, well, I mean, the fact that they hid Obama's stuff right at the beginning, and it was completely sealed and everything.
Yep.
You know, that stuff speaks of very, very high-level treason that was going on there. And them sealing all his records and Obama getting – am I correct if I say that the Jews raised almost $750 million for Obama's presidential campaign, I think?
I do not know if it's completely Jews, and I don't know what the figure is. I will tell you that when he got into Chicago politics, Illinois politics, that it was all Jewish groups and Jewish money and everything else. All of a sudden, he was their boy.
Okay. You see, and they give their people good publicity. There's another non-white in your country. He comes from South Africa. I forget his name now. He's on your TV a lot. He's
Don Lemon.
Sorry?
Don Lemon?
No, he's a mixed race guy, and he's on your TV a lot. And he's actually a colored from South Africa, and he likes to attack Trump.
Is he a comedian? He's a stand-up comedian. Yeah, okay. I know you're talking about. I've never watched him, but I know you're talking about. I won't even sit there and listen to these people. But keep going.
Yeah. Now he's mixed race, and his father was from Switzerland, and from what I read over here, his father was from Switzerland. His mother was a black here in one of these townships. And then after he was born, they don't tell you that his father was Jewish. But then after he was born, his mother converted, his mother, who's a black causa, converted to Judaism.
Right.
So he even had a bar mitzvah. And you know, that's all kind of weird. And now you'll find, and can you believe that his name escapes me? But he was Trevor Noah. That's the name. Trevor Noah. That's the guy. Trevor Noah. And then you'll see that he comes from South Africa. Suddenly he's in America. Suddenly he's making money like you cannot believe. Jews at work. And you know what another guy told me in America, before I forget, is another one of my hosts said to me that Jews changed America. They changed the sports of America. That in the 1950s, the main sport in the U.S. was baseball. And that they slowly changed the sports in America so that it's now basketball and football. And you'll see it's dominated by blacks, and they're getting enormous amounts of money.
Yep. But all their managers are Jewish, and they all most of them end up penniless because the Jews get their money back. And most of the teams are owned by Jews. I mean, the local team here is the Washington Redskins. And that's owned by a Jew. I can't think of his name now. But anyway, I mean, I've been saying for years, you know what I mean, that the name Washington Redskins is racist. You know, they should need to change it. You know, they've got a good Jewish boy, right, who's a good Jewish boy. No, I mean, he's a nice guy and a good Jewish boy, you know, owns a team. So I think they should change the name to reflect their Jewish owner. So my new name for the team, okay, is the Washington Yidkikes. Okay, so they're the Washington Redskins, Washington Yidkikes. So, I mean, no, it's not. I mean, if Redskins not racist, so how can Yidkikes be racist? You know, I mean, just like, you know, Yiddish and, you know, so, but anyway, you know, but there's so many other teams, it's the same way. You know, there are exceptions to the rules, but I think you'll probably find that most of them are Jewish.
Right.
You know, I mean, I know that. Recently, like the head of the baseball league was Jewish, you know, the head of the basketball league is Jewish, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They're the ones who control the game, you know, where the franchises are, you know, when they build a new stadium in a city, you'll go into the city and you'll see all the building contracts to build a new stadium. You follow which companies get the building contracts.
Yes.
You know, which mayor or county, you know, council okays it, you know, look at who they are. It goes on and on and on and on. And this is, you know, like I said, I mean, coming back, you know, I mentioned earlier on about the books. Okay. You know, the controlling what goes into those books for the children. Look who prints the books.
Yeah.
Simon and you know what I mean? Like Beaverbrook from Canada. You know, I mean, it goes on and on and on again. You know, not only are they controlling the content, you're picking certain publishers.
Yes. Yeah, Chris, I must say, there's a heck of a lot of activity going on there. Final things I want to check with you. And Antifa is an important thing because I regard Antifa as like an enemy force that whites need to deal with. Didn't Trump say something about he's going to have Antifa categorized as a terrorist group?
Yes.
Has he done anything? Are there any possibilities?
Not to my knowledge, and without giving up too much, we are waiting and watching eagerly because of this. But I mean, you can see. Which is sort of public knowledge. If you have half a brain in America, if you do something across state lines, you sort of organize crimes across state lines. it comes into sort of conspiracy charges. And if it's an organization, they're not happy with an organization, then it comes into like what's called RICO over here, which is a racketeering charge. You know, like the mafia have been hit with quite a few times. And of course, Antifa is not a real organization. Well, all I can say is lots of organizations, especially being hit now with that, like Hezbollah has been hit with it and other ones that have been classed as terrorist organizations. So I would say if Trump's going to go after them and he starts the ball rolling, he's probably already done his due diligence and figured all this out beforehand, you know, which way he's going to go. And I would say he's pretty close. If he does it, then like I said, I think it's a bit of a game changer, to be honest. But the ACLU, which is run by a Jew, okay?
Yes.
American Civil Liberty. Now, the ACLU, come back to Charlottesville, who are the ones who got the permit for the Unite the Right rally. When the shit hit the fan and those eight guys needed lawyers,
yeah.
Where's the ACLU? Oh, we don't represent Nazis. That came from the Jewish head of the ACLU.
Wow.
So basically, the ACLU was in bed again with Antifa, the left, the Jews, the liberals, the progressives, whatever name you want to put to it, the newspapers, the Pew Foundation.
Yeah, that nobody who's anything is on the side of whites. Whites are on their own.
Right.
So I wonder if Trump will do something. He says things that I like. But there are some things that even when he says it and he doesn't do it, even just the act of saying it is still a very positive thing. So I have a soft spot for him on that.
We Mon and I were under no illusion when we backed him with the radio show for the president. We knew damn well he was going to bloody support Israel, and. You know, but the other day he said, oh, they're white supremacists and organized drug cartels are doing all the rioting. And he's like, no, they're not. He said they're like Antifa and left-wing extremists.
Beautiful. So he stood up.
Like, wow, thank you very much, sir. You know, it's that was good. But there's another thing that, guess what's been, if you've heard about it, I would be very, very surprised. Last week, the Republicans and the Democrats, this is in the middle of the rioting, this coronavirus, voted to give Israel another $38 billion. When I heard about this, I went straight to my Fox News app and screamed down it to see if one mention of it. Then I went to CNN, not one mention. Went to the BBC, not a mention.
You're
went to
kidding
LG.
Me.
So
is this $38 billion given in a year or given as a lump sum?
It's given over 10 years as $3.8 billion a year.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I'm going to make a note.
So that's when America's burning. They just gave $38 billion up to them. It's like, you know, there you go. So, again, you know, fact check out there, ladies and gentlemen.
Unreal, hey? Yeah. You know, these Jews are, you know, America is going to be the picture postcard of what Jews do. And, you know, when everybody looks back on this 100 or 200 years from now, people won't believe, you know, they'll just say, if you want to know how Jews can fuck up a country, just look at America, here are all the facts. And it's just going to look like a fucking encyclopedia, actually.
It took me a long time to become an American. It took me, you know, a couple of years and a lot of lawyers to become an American, and I don't really understand why. I've got my theories. I was never, ever questioned about anything in my activities because that would definitely come under First Amendment rights, you know what I mean? But I do believe that there was some sort of information asked, and I know they pulled my taxes for 30 years. They checked with the British police, they checked with Interpol, obviously FBI, and they put me through the ringer. Even though I've been married for over 30 years, they said that my marriage might be a marriage of convenience. I laughed, really? I've been married to her for 30 years, so I can become an American citizen? Like, are you kidding me? Anyway, but
I plan ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not making this stuff up. I'm not making this stuff up. But, it's like unbelievable. But I sort of lost my train of thought a little bit there. yeah.
Well, another point I want to check with you as we sort of wind up here is Trump said something about he's going to shoot to kill. Is that true? Has he said he's going to put out the military? What has happened since?
I think he probably opened his mouth too much. I do believe that it might have to come to that, but I think he probably should have not. I think that's one of those. I think people are like begging, please shoot. I said that my mum said, please shoot, please, let's stop this.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
People are saying about that poor black. Say so. What about the, forget the color, what about the whites, Koreans, you know what I mean? And other people out there who run businesses and, you know, work in banks and stores and, you know what I mean? What about them? What about their protection? You know what I mean? So, yeah, we lost one black who's a porno armed robbery druggie, which is terrible. That's still somebody's baby. You know, but the thing is like, but all these other people are losing their lives and everything, and people are forgetting that. You know, it's
How many people do you think have been killed so far? Any guesses?
10? Maybe 10, but I mean, okay. Dozens and dozens injured and maybe a few thousand arrests. So I don't know. I mean, I'll have to look at the numbers tonight, because I'm probably going to be on a couple of radio shows tonight here in the States. So I'll probably have to swat up and get some facts and figures to throw in into the conversations. But I'm usually sort of brought in as somebody who knows a little bit more than the usual. No, it's pretty frightening. And again, I'm pretty sure that every city, every state that have the problems are Democrat.
All right.
That
well,
might
it's...
be.
Go ahead.
I was going to say there might be an exception to the rule, but I think that pretty much you'll find that most of it would be 90 plus percent are going to be Democrat run.
Okay. Well, it looks to me like they are definitely trying to keep the violence alive and keep it going for as long as possible. And Jews protecting their black pets who go and do their killing for them.
Yeah, I mean, there's another interesting thing, though, is the youngsters. And I'm not talking about 14 or 15-year-olds. I mean, I know if there was riots going into my city, I'd want to know where my 14 or 15-year-old children were. Right, you know, where are you? Get home. Everybody's got a cell phone now, you know. Where's the parents?
Yes.
But some of the kids were as young as 9 or 10 years old.
Are they black?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
I mean, the intellectuals, and, you know, I mean, they don't have their children on the front line. You know, the Antifas.
The blacks we found over here, the blacks don't even really care about their own kids. You know, it's not the same thing. But yeah, so Chris, you know, you being doxxed, and you know, another thing that I also came across that I must mention before I go is I was looking at an article on the New Scientist, and they were talking about how private information on Americans is being bought and sold in the dark web. So yep. all this information that is supposed to be private seems to now be managing to get out, and this stuff comes out of databases. It's vast amounts of information. I can't see that it actually is happening by accident. I mean, as a computer programmer, I also had access to databases and confidential information. There are people who've got to be on the inside who have got friends, and they are pumping this stuff out. It's really quite shocking, the stuff that they're putting out. And now they are using it to go after only whites on the white right. That seems to be the only people who get nailed.
Well, this woman we mentioned earlier on, Megan Squire, that was her job, working for all these big internet companies doing cybersecurity. And then she transferred over and, you know, became a professor at that university. And I think it's actually a bit of a joke because of the university. I think she's purely there because of political reasons. And she now has access with private endowments and alumni and stuff like this through this university, she has access to these massive computers. And she's probably, like we know for a fact, are probably backed by the SPLC and the Israelis. You know, but the other thing is I said, you know, and I can't remember if it was on the show here or whether it was before the show, that the Americans, going back to the days of the telephone bills, itemized phone bills, where, in other words, they knew every phone call you made and how much you paid for each phone call. So, you know, you're on 10 minutes, you get paid this amount of money. You're on 2 minutes, you pay this. And if it's long distance, you pay that. Every single one of those bills are archived and kept in Israel. And the government, I think the government owns 51% or 49%. I forget now which is either there, you know. So they basically own half of the company. So that means that, you know, I mean, pretty much, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, well, at least probably 20 plus years ago, I mean, but more than 20 years, I'm guessing, thinking back, you know, paying phone bills for years and years, all that information is in the hands of the Israelis. So they go through and say, oh, Chris been calling for the last 20 years.
Well, this is like NSA stuff. I remember reading some years ago also, or somebody mentioned, I'm not sure if it was Dr. William Pierce, but somebody also mentioned that NSA and CIA data ends up in the Mossad, and Israel gets huge amounts of data from America. It's truly shocking because Jews are out to hunt for Americans, yet right. America is handing it databases on its own citizens.
And the other thing is, who develops most of the software for, like, the Pentagon and the FBI, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
Is this all Israeli Jews again?
Loads of Israeli companies, yeah. Yep.
And then all you have to do is go and look at all those Israeli startups and things who are selling American and Western technology to Russia, to China, you name it.
Yep. I'll tell you another thing is, a friend of mine with the Pentagon, he's retired now from the military and he's now living in California. And has a very liberal wife. And I was talking to him the other day about this and general politics and what have you. I mean, one of the reasons he couldn't handle the Pentagon anymore is because of the fat black women who were not in any physical type of condition. And they were fat, smelly, you know, sort of sweaty. And they would leave all their computers turned on all the time and their fast foods all over the place. And they're having to employ these special Filipino crews or Mexican crews to come in, or Latinos, to clean up the place. And another thing that he told me, so he's like, he said, these can hardly get up out of their chair. He said, but that was a fat white person. He said they wouldn't even be allowed to get that fat before they'd be thrown out of the military or put on a diet or whatever. So again, and he also said a bit about their hairstyles. You know what I mean? He said, how am I supposed to put a gas mask on? And they all have these crazy long nails. And he said, you know, if you put on a gas, a gas, you know, like, but another thing he said to me about is, and I'll get to the point about some money in a moment with Israel, is the amount of Israelis that just walk around the Pentagon and allowed to go anywhere. And he said in their Israeli uniforms. And he said, when he had some sort of attachment and he went to Israel, did something with the army. And he said, every time he walked down the corridor with his American army uniform on, they'd say, no, you can't go there. This, you're not allowed in here. They wouldn't allow him. The guards wouldn't allow him. He said, but over here, they said, oh, I'm Israeli. You know what I mean? I can do what I want. And then the guards are like, oh, you know what I mean? And nobody's stopping them. They just walk around and do whatever they want. Now, another thing, talking about the 38 billion. Now, this goes back for years and years and years and years. So you have the aid. Everybody knows about the aids. Charities that supply, Jewish charities that supply money, you know, to Israel and all the other money that goes over there. This is what the general public doesn't know about in the United States of the world. The United States has a massive military arms dumps, equipment dumps, except storage. People don't really understand what a dump is. Storage facilities.
Yeah.
Now, that comes out of the Pentagon budget, because that's in the Middle East, supposedly. So if we get in a war in the Middle East, America got all that stuff there. What happens is, when they need some bullets, they need some ammo, they need a new jet engine or Apache propellers, it comes out the back door of the American military storage facilities there in Israel, and it's not accountable. It just shows up as gone. It doesn't say it's been given to the Israelis.
Oh, wow.
And that was told to me by a colonel.
Wow. That the stuff that you've heard from that colonel, that is very interesting.
Well, Antifa said, I have no connections. They said, oh, you don't know this person, don't know. Well, okay, I don't. No, I mean, this is like shocking. You know, I mean, you look at, you know, under Obama, all the generals that were fired, or the Air Force.
Yes.
You know, and naval stuff that they didn't agree with what was going on.
Now, you know, there's another South African similarity, if I may jump in, is that in the final years of South Africa, when we had our, let's call it our treasonous president who decided to hand over power to the blacks at all costs, F.W. de Klerk, in his time when he became president, he immediately started firing generals as well. General, because in South Africa, even the police have got a military structure. So he fired police generals, he fired army generals, etc. That is basically, they're basically purging beforehand. And you mentioned Obama. I remember with Obama, lots of guys, admirals, etc., just going down one after the other.
Yep.
They're busy.
Pro-Bama, we call him Obongo on the show.
because they are busy destroying America. They're using their high-level powers to destroy America and manipulate the politics and the military and the everything. You know, these Jews must be laughing up their sleeves. They've got to be laughing at us all the time.
There was an ex-general on the TV the other day, an American general who was bitching and complaining about Trump, and I can't think of his name. I think his name was Clark, but anyway. He was in charge of NATO and the whole of Europe, before he retired. Jewish.
Wow.
There you go. Let me tell you another thing, what the Turks have got the Americans by the balls a little bit, is their bases in Turkey.
Yeah.
The American bases in Turkey, because it's high, up in the hills and the mountains.
Yeah.
But basically, without those American bases, Israel is blind, because the American radar facilities are basically the ones looking after the Israel, and also American AWACS, which is the air warning,
yes.
U.S. Air Force. So basically, you know, I mean, the Israelis do the dirty, but it's American, you know.
Without America, they wouldn't have the capability to know what's going on. That's what
they'd still be pretty tough, but they know. So this is why Turkey can get away with so much, you know, with the Americans threaten this, and next thing Turkey say this, that, and the other. You know, well, okay, then we're not going to do this or do that, and all of a sudden, all the problems disappear. then the news is talking about something else, because Turkey's flexed its muscles and said, oh, okay, then we have, you know, and then there's, you know, so...
Very strange. The whole Jewish globalist thing. Well, yeah, Chris, been a very interesting chat. We've touched on lots and lots of things, and I definitely hope that we can talk again. Are there any final words that you've got? Any thoughts from your end? Are you going to be back online?
Yeah, we're going to be back up on the show's going to be under another name and another format, so we have to change a few things. You know, that brings me one thought about coming back to, you know, they closed down VK and Facebook and everything else. The smart thing, if you're watching somebody, is to leave everybody in place and then you gather information. So, you know, there's thousands of people on VK, there's thousands of people on Facebook. You just watch them. You just gather intelligence. You know, you just sit there, you let them put out pictures of Hitler's birthday cake.
Yes.
Why would you take them down? The only reason you take them down is you know they're going to come back and reinvent themselves and come back. You take them down for a reason. Because the reason is this crap now, when we've losing all our communications and we can't talk to each other. It was a deliberate act. So, you know, to the people in South Africa, hey, you need to prep big time. If you're not prepping now, you better.
Even I'm prepping more than before. I've been taking it easier. I'm also sitting and thinking about firearms and stuff.
Yep.
Because from what I can see, I think we're all heading into, I think we're heading into a crazier world, maybe even some kind of civil war in South Africa or in America.
I mean, there's other things as well. You know, it's a bolt hole. You know what I mean? If you have a house, you know, build yourself a trap door, which is like a site, you know, which is quite large, like a double coffin, twice the size of a coffin, and you leave it open all the time, and you hear somebody kicking your door in, bang. You know what I mean? You just jump in there, and the door comes down. It looks like a normal floor. I mean, that sounds absolutely extreme, you know what I mean? But you don't want to be like, so in other words, especially in South Africa, you don't know who's coming in the door. Quite a little, maybe a little bit different here, but I know I've been to people's homes and they've shown me they've got shelters built. I mean, this is how, I mean, guns, and they have a second home, you know what I mean? They'll have vehicles, older vehicles with carburetors and no computers.
So nice to hear about the vehicles. That's another topic. That's one that I've been thinking about a lot. And I've got one old car that I keep because you want an old vehicle. You don't want these things that you can't repair. That's quite.
And then you want two or three batteries. You need two spare tires, et cetera, you know. You need a few spares as well. And the other thing is, like you said, if it's an old vehicle, put it up on blocks, take the wheels off, hide the tires, you know, open the hood, the bonnet, and you know what I mean, and take out the distributor or something. So that way the distributor, you know, what we call the rotor button, so it looks like they come in there, it looks like it's an old piece of junk vehicle, you know what I mean, throw some gas in there, put the wheels on, and bang, you know, throw a battery in there, and your vehicle's back on the road very quickly. I didn't think that one. That's been used many, many times.
It's good. All this violence and stuff is also, it must be pushing people into the white right. And that is the good part of it. Even COVID was making people very uncomfortable over here. People who would normally never do anything, they became quite uncomfortable with this lockdown and their businesses and their jobs just being destroyed, you know? So I think worse is better, you know. Let the Jews bring on the chaos. Let them carry on burning shit down. This must be a big wake up call in America, hey? I mean, when last did America have riots like this?
No, I agree. I don't think he's ever had riots like this, to be honest. I think we had, you know, riots like in Watts in Los Angeles. You had the Rodney King thing a few years ago. But I think there's a different thing now is where people are watching the riots on television. Where now the internet and everything else and people with their phones, you know, filming each other and what have you. I think it's a different thing. But there's certain people here in this country who are accelerationists. And I've always disagreed with accelerationists.
I'm an accelerationist.
Right. I'm on the other side. But I've said, let them bring the war to us, not us take the war to them. I want to be ready. And I say to people, watch what the Viet Cong did. Look what, you know, other groups did. Read the Art of War and be ready. You know what I mean? So in other words, we're sort of ready now. And you know what I mean? So I'll have two guns out there. I'll have my AR-15 with really good sights. I'm going to have either a British 303 or my 270. And now we've got roadblocks, okay? So the roadblocks are ready to go in. So bang, we've got, you know, the reason I mentioned the two guns, because they've got different size bullets. You know what I mean? If I want to take out a vehicle, it'll be the big gun. And if I want to take out a person, it'll be the smaller bullet.
You've been doing your homework. I like.
So it's, you know what I mean? Another thing, we're ready to get rid of bodies. I don't want dead bodies all over the place. You know what I mean? So I built myself, and you know, like my own sort of, not quite, but it's sort of ready because we don't want dead bodies rotting all over the place.
So what's your solution to the dead bodies?
Burn them.
Okay.
It's the easiest and quickest way and the most hygienic way of getting rid of them. And I don't want to be throwing them into, you know, stream or biostream.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
I mean, it's really, you have to be very, very careful of dead bodies for lots of reasons. And, you know, and also you want to clean up the neighborhood. And if there is a civil war and we shoot a few people and in order to martial law and then some sort of normality, the Americans like the word normalcy, a normality takes place and people come and say, hey, what happened to these 37 people? I said, no idea. I've got no clue. I've no clue, you know. So, you know, I mean, seriously, you know, if they're going to come up here and steal and kill and rape and pillage, then we have to take things into our own hands. And that actually is the law. You can defend yourself and your family against these people. So, but again, who knows who will take over?
Yeah.
You know, it might be that the other side takes over, and that's another reason we can't leave all these bodies all over the place, because they will use it against us.
I still think that the white man still has plenty of power in the USA.
Yep.
And those AR-15s, I've been watching them. My mouth is watering when I look at those things. I wish we had more of them here. But we do have some people. We've got a couple of people who've got some of those kinds of weapons. Not many, but there are a couple. But yeah, Chris, it's going to be very interesting to watch how things develop, and we'll keep in touch. And thank you very much for appearing on our show. It's been very interesting talking to you. And you got some really interesting friends, I must tell you. That colonel sounds very interesting.
Yeah, and he, you know, I have other people as well. I mean, sort of special forces guys and everything else. And it's not just them. I mean, it's just normal people as well. And, you know, it sounds when you talk about the military and the special forces. But be honest, they have their specialty. In some ways, the Mr. Farmer up the road is probably a more important ally than the ex-Navy SEAL.
Okay.
Because he has so many more skills than maybe what that, and I'm sort of using two examples in my head of people I know. Don't get me wrong, the Navy SEAL is a bit of a badass, but he has his limitations for what he can do. But the other guy can weld, drive tractors, and fix things. He knows the land, and you know, he's a plumber, an electrician. He can hunt. He can gut a deer. You know, where
he's Navy got a SEALs lot more are, skills. Okay.
Possibly. That's not to say that all Navy SEALs don't know that, because a lot of them do know that stuff, you know. But
a question for you, a final question. Your colonel friend and your special forces friends, are they on our side or partly on our side?
No, yes. And I'm also part of, yeah, okay. Yep. Yes.
Excellent.
I'd say that most police officers are as well, especially when you get out of the towns. When you get into the local, you know, when you get into police forces, which are outside of town, and then, of course, most sheriff's departments. I mean, for example, 90-something percent of the sheriffs, I think like 95, 96% of the sheriff's departments in Virginia said they will not enforce the governor's new laws on gun control.
Beautiful.
That's staggering.
Beautiful. So they've openly said it, and they've spat in his face.
Yep, the Virginia sheriff.
So gun control, despite what the Virginia governor has said, gun control is basically still a failure in Virginia?
It's going to be a failure whether they change the law or not, because people are not giving up their guns.
Excellent. Guns are more important than free speech. If you lose your free speech, you can't get it back, but if you got guns, you can get back your guns. You can get your free speech back anytime.
There's a reason the First and Second Amendment are part and parcel of the same thing, why they were put in at the same time.
Beautiful. Yeah, weapons, very important. Well, Chris, thank you very much for appearing on the show. It's been awesome having you, and we'll be keeping in touch. And there's stuff I still want to talk to you about that's separate to
Absolutely.
That.
Yep.
Okay, Chris, take care.
All right, mate.
We'll chat again. Take care, hey.
Okay.
Thanks
Bye.
Again.
Bye.
Okay, bye. These are Alex Linder's websites, www.alexlinder.com, pieville.net. That's his Twitter type of website. www.vnnforum.com. You'll find a ton of information on there. And then his news website, which is www.kirksvilletoday.com.
These are my websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-sharp.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourself.